kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me, not as usual, is Cole. She's not here still, but Pernell and Chris are here. Hey, how are you guys doing? Party cast time.
Hi, hi.
Hey-ho. It's been wild. I don't want to hold us up too much, so just imagine needing to go to check, like, you know, my breathing capacity, having to give up caffeine, and someone trying to take advantage of my wallet on Bumble. It's been a crazy week, but otherwise I'm playing games and shit. So, hey, it's not for love.
Playing games and shit is always good, especially when there are good games to play. Like the game our guests are here to talk about from LiquidBit. It is Matt Tesh and Mike Chorak. Did I say it right?
Chorak's right.
Yep. Chorak. All right. How are you two doing today?
Cut. Doing great, man. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. For the people who don't know what Killer Queen Black is, if I could talk tonight, that'd be fucking great. For the people who don't know what Killer Queen Black is, give us the rundown. Give us the sales pitch.
You know, we're working on this game for 4.5 years. We've never actually mastered, like, the elevator pitch. So Killer Queen Black is a 8-person online action strategy platformer, and it's 2 teams of 4, and there are 3 different ways to win. And we can get into all more about what the specifics are and all that kind of cool stuff later on. But it was actually born as an arcade game, right? So in 2013, Bumble Bear Games released Killer Queen, and it's a 10-person arcade cabinet. It is huge. It's like the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. Like, it's unbelievable.
Where was it actually released at? Because honestly, this is the first time even learning it was an arcade machine.
Oh, you're kidding. No, yeah, dude. I think there's like 100-something cabinets in the U.S. I should have this, like, little drop ready, but now if you go to, like, bumblebeargames.com, you'll be able to find Killer Queen Arcade, and they have, like, all the locations of where those machines are. And then hopefully one day when the world returns back to normal, we can all go back to those great places that have the arcade game and play it in person. But, you know, that came from. It came from an arcade game that Mike and Adam and Justice and our other partner at LiquidBit, you know, we played the game. We loved it. We were actually making some multiplayer prototypes of other concepts, but we just kept coming back to, you know what, man, like, for our first game, which this is, Killer Queen really, like, ticks all the boxes for, like, multiplayer play or multiplayer experience, I should say. And so we got on the phone with Bumble Bear and talked to them and said, you know, what do you think about bringing this to the home market? Fast forward, maybe a couple of months and some demos and more conversations, and, you know, Killer Queen Black was put into development as kind of this outreach of this arcade that has this, you know, a cult-like following. I guess not on your podcast since you never heard of it, but out there in the wild, man, there are some really dedicated and amazing people in community, and just watching the competitive play and, you know, the team versus team and the yelling and the shouting, and, you know, it is an amazing thing to play and watch and experience. And we fell in love and got hooked on it. And like I said, you know, we're lucky enough to be able to work with the creators of the arcade game. And they worked on Killer Queen Black with game design and level design. And we're able to bring out, the home version of the game for everybody to play online.
So now I'm kind of curious then. So this was originally the arcade game. It was Killer Queen. And I still don't know if the song is any relation to the title of the game, but if so, that'd be double awesome. But it, then, of course, it became Killer Queen Black, which is the home version that we're talking about today. For those of us who are like, now it's a home game. Were there any particular changes made to the Killer Queen Black version? Or is it just like, hey, it's the game you love, but now you can play it on your favorite home consoles?
No, there were a lot of changes that had to be made. We took a look at a straight port of the arcade game, and it didn't work for a million different reasons. One, it's a 5v5 game, and we wanted to be able to have a couch full of players, and there's, you know, a lot of consoles have an eight controller limitation. We had to adapt the gameplay to accommodate latency to work over the network. And that took us down a million different directions in terms of what the attack systems are, what the weapons are, what the power-ups are. We had to actually make the characters bigger because we couldn't control the size of the screen that you're playing on, right? Like in the arcade, you've got like this, I don't know how big it is, like 60-inch TV that you're like 2 feet away from, right? And so you can get away with some really small sprites on that screen because it's still, you know, it looks huge. You're right up to it. But, you know, when we started playing around with what that looks like on your computer monitor, on your laptop, on your Nintendo Switch and handheld, right, man? Like, we were like, yeah, we gotta bump the size of this, of these characters up. And in order to really accommodate the gameplay that we wanted to maintain from the arcade, it turned out that we had to actually remove one of the characters, just to make room on the screen, you know, along with all the other platform considerations and everything that goes along with it.
And that does make sense, because I can tell you, from my experience with this game, this gets to be, even with just the 4-player limit per team anyway, this gets to be quite chaotic when everything's going down. So, first and foremost, I want to point out that I kind of find it funny that in traditional SML, you know, fashion, I bought this game on the Switch ways back, with the intent being for that one in a million scenario where I have 4 people at my house and we want to play something local. I want to have a cool game. And I was like, well, Killer Queen looks pretty awesome. And then I never played it. So it came time to talk about it for the show. I was like, I can finally see what this game's all about. You know, that game I bought. And suffice to say, I think it's pretty freaking awesome. I should lay out a little bit of the content for people who are listening to us, because they're probably like, you guys are talking about
this. I like how I asked, like, give us a sales pitch on the game, and Purnell's like, tell us every difference between the game immediately.
Hey, it just kind of went that direction. But just the general layout of the game is just, it's a 4v4 game where, unlike a lot of games like this that I see, you actually have 3 different ways to win on every match, pretty much. Which is to collect these orbs that are scattered throughout the map and deliver them to your home base. There's another method being to ride a snail across the map, which I gotta flat out say is my favorite way to win a match. It's because there's just something relaxing about your guy. Like, yay, I'm going.
Yeah, I have not yet won a match with the snail.
No?
Mm-mm, I can't do it.
I won my first match with the snail because I wasn't letting that bad boy go. And it's also because of the fact that, so the snail is very slow because it's a freaking snail. What do you expect? And he's crawling across the board, and you can't hurt the snail to stop it. But what you can do, if there's 2 ways to stop the snail, pretty much.
Purnell.
Kill the rider.
Purnell. Huh? Let the guests tell us about the snail.
No, man, he's doing a better job than we are.
We love to hear this from people who play the game.
Like, Purnell's diving into the review right now.
Because I just wanted to talk it up, because my question is going to end up being, what's their favorite way to win a match? But basically, the snail crawls across the map, and the way to stop it is either to kill the rider or to sacrifice yourself to the snail, which is freaking hysterical. Just let the snail eat you because he stops to do it. And then the last way to win a match is to actually kill the queen unit for the other team 3 times. And of course, you kill her by getting power ups that are scattered throughout the map, which can be locked to a team. It's a surprisingly hectic game, and I think it's fantastic. But the question itself, what's your favorite way to win a match?
So for me, It's got to be Queen, because I usually like to play as the Queen. I don't know, she's just so mobile, right? And it's like, you're flying all over the map, you're taking control of the gates, like you were saying, you're controlling the power-ups, you know. You're clearing people off the snail, you're trying to stay alive, because if you die three times, you lose the whole game for your team. So it's stressful, but it's a ton of fun, because she's so mobile, she's so quick, and you can pull off a lot of crazy stuff. And, you know, when you watch like high-end play, like if you watch, we have these league matches that go on throughout the week, and you watch some of these top-tier players play as Queen, and I'm like, you know, I wrote a lot of that code for how the Queen moves around, and I'm like, I didn't know she could even do that. That's crazy.
She feels real good to play, yeah.
Right? But so like when you were talking about the snail too, the funny thing about that is like when you first play at the arcade, like Matt was saying, you're like 2 feet away from the TV. So you have to like almost turn your head to like see what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. It's like this big map. And like the lure of the snail is that like there's all this chaos going on while you're riding it and nobody's paying attention to you. Right? Yeah. And so it's like such a rush. It's such a rush to get it like all the way. It's like nobody's looking. I could do it, right?
But and on the flip side, it is such a fun, jarring moment when you're in the middle of combat and all of a sudden everything freezes up and it zooms down to the bottom corner and some little minion is riding on the back of the snail cheering. I'm like, oh, son of a bitch, I lost because of that snail.
But at the same time, you can't fault that. I mean, if you lose to the snail, that's a proud moment. It's like saying, you know, we lost, but that's an earned win when the snail takes it. You can't let them have it. Yeah, and also just the snail's freaking adorable. You can't hate the snail.
Oh, and that animation when the snail eats somebody is just, it's great. Oh, like, if you ever pay attention to it, there's like all this slime and stuff. It's
yeah.
Like, it's pretty
Not
intense.
To mention the sound good. Effects. The
gold. Yeah, good sound effects too.
It's freaking glorious. And the thing is, to be thematic with the show, I'm actually watching the freaking matches right now because I'm going to flat out tell you, that is a feature that should not be this entertaining. Like, just booting up, you know, before I start my session for the night, I want to just watch a match or two.
You're going to watch a bunch of people who are so much better than I'll ever be.
Hey, don't shoot yourself in the foot. I've seen some rough players on this stage.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was just watching it a little bit before the show while I was drinking my tea, and the players that were playing were really bad. But that was also entertaining. Xbox
players. Yeah. Yeah. Now, we got a big, you know, just rush of new players, you know, since we launched on Xbox. So it's cool to see people like hop in and, you know, and like some more of our veteran players, like they're all on Discord and they're pretty cool. It's like, you know, if we get matched against, you know, some newbies, newbie, N-E-W-B-E-E, of course. Hey, they usually take it pretty easy, you know?
Yeah.
Because the tough part with the game, right, is you have that queen and she only has three lives. So she's super vulnerable. So if you have somebody that's new playing as the queen, it can be a little rough, you know?
Yeah.
Because she's got to stay alive and, you know, be tagging gates and everything. So,
yeah, I've had a lot of new queen players playing with me. Those matches didn't go well.
I will say this, though. One thing that I like about this compared to a lot of other games like this is the fact that, say, for example, the typical team combat games that people get into these days are usually shooters, FPS games. If it's not that, it's a MOBA, but generally shooters. And I personally feel there's a high skill level to even get into a shooter, multiplayer shooter match. Like, you pretty much go in there just to get your ass handed to you. I feel like with this game, even though there is definitely a clear cut between, like, you know, who's the best and who's like an amateur, I feel like while you're playing it, you still feel like you have a shot. Like, you don't just get into a match like, well, this was a waste of my time because clearly I'm just making this bad for my other team, for my teammates. Yeah, I always feel like I'm doing something. So it's kind of, oh, and for the record, I just watched a fantastic kill. So certain matches have the hives on like opposite sides of a wall with a small alcove beneath that can only be accessed by a diving queen.
Right.
And I just watched a guy dive under as his queen to kill the new queen as it was spawning.
Ooh, bad manners.
Yeah, came into the house. It just like took you down.
I think one of the maps is designed in a way where you can dash through that alcove like right when the game starts and just wipe out the entire team. Like you get a clear.
Oh my god. She's like,
that's
I like
so
this
dickish. That's fantastic.
I know.
Yeah, stay on your toes because someone's gonna be like, "Oh, this we're on the honor system," and then the guy's gonna be like, "Fuck the honor system!" Boom.
Right.
Clear. Yeah, what does that tell you about us? Like, we had every opportunity to not make that part of the game. We're like, "Nah, we're gonna leave that in there."
Hey, you gotta do that. You gotta leave room for super dickery. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, no, that was a good move.
Yeah, that coupled with their, so you can throw up emojis in the game, like above your character, you know, and so doing that coupled with a ha-ha emoji right after, it was really the icing of the cake.
And of course, I mean, kick in the pants.
Yep.
You have voice chat running, oh, that just, everyone screaming, like, put the bullseye target on your back, like, that son of a bitch! We were going for the win, but then suddenly everyone started chasing the queen, huh? What's going on? The snail's just rolling like nobody's business. Yeah.
But let's jump back a little bit. You mentioned a big influx of players coming because of the Xbox launch. Tell us what led to the game coming to Xbox and how did you guys get it on Game Pass? Because I think that is such a fantastic help for the game being on Game Pass and just giving it that huge audience right off the bat.
Yeah. You know, I mean, credit to Xbox, you know, and ID, the ID program at Xbox, right? Like, when we announced the game, at, what was that? E3 2018, something like that. You know, it wasn't long after that they got in touch. And you know, we're talking to us about at least bringing the game onto the platform, helping us out with development kits, getting us into their development portal, all that good stuff. And then, you know, honestly, quite frankly, it was a phone call from Xbox asking if we were interested in Game Pass. Obviously, they're, you know, Microsoft is just investing tons. I mean, that's Xbox's strategy, right? Is Game Pass, you know, and the Netflix of games is kind of being called on the internet, right? Like, and they're pushing a ton of titles in that direction. And we were lucky enough and blessed enough to be offered that chance. And yeah, right. It makes perfect sense for a game like this, right? You know, you either go free to play and have, you know, in-app monetization strategies, which we didn't go that direction, right? We were more concerned about building a game than building, you know, a catalog. And quite frankly, with the size of our team and everything that went into building our first game to being an online 8-player simultaneous one screen multiplayer game, like we had our hands full. And so we went the other route. And so being on services like Game Pass, it's the best of both worlds. You know, it's absolutely fantastic for the game. And they were proactive and reached out and that's how it all came about.
Man, it was very similar with the Switch too, right?
It was, yep. You know, when Nintendo had reached out to us, that was actually a meeting that we had set up previously. We showed it to them in a hotel room, believe it or not. Like, it wasn't even at a convention. You know, they were there for the convention, but we got the hotel room visit, and it was actually Josh and Nick. They were out there, and we played a remote game. So Mike, Adam, and I from Chicago, Josh and Nick, and the folks at the, you know, on the indie side of games over at Nintendo, and like literally played it on a laptop over a cellular connection, and they were like, "Great, dude. We want this, and we want to show it at the next E3. You know, it helps because of the arcade game, right? Because of, you know, the establishment and the community, and there's a pretty decent presence of the arcade game on the West Coast and in Seattle, right? In Portland, those are really big areas.
I actually just found out there's one right across the corner from me.
There you go, man.
But you can walk to it.
I'm in Austin, Texas, and I'm right down the street from an arcade place that has it.
You got to take a picture of it. You got to, well, put a mask.
Once I can go there.
Oh, is that closed up still, too? Like, well when you can, mask up. Want to see it.
I mean, there was some news today that, you know, apparently they're going to try and open up Texas 100% next week, which is a very bad idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, theoretically, I could go.
Yeah, only if it's the closing hours. Like, shoot, I'm going for a meal pickup to go, and here's a snapshot. Now run.
Yeah,
but
no, they're opening up 100%. Obviously, it's fine to just go down, risk your life to You get a picture for Purnell.
Yes.
Well, hey. I love Chris. He's a good friend. I'm not telling him to do it, but I'm also not telling him not to do it. I mean, stop. Don't do it, Chris, but also it'd be awesome if you did, but don't do it.
I will someday.
That's what I like. That's what it's all about.
There you go. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
What were we talking about? Oh, Nintendo. Yeah, same deal. You know, and like I said, like having the arcade game out there in the community, it's big on the West Coast. They knew about it, and so they were super excited to see the home version come through.
That is really cool. The arcade version, obviously, there's people like me who live in low populated areas that don't have arcades around them. I don't even know where the closest Dave and Buster's is to me. I couldn't find probably Philly, which is 3 hours. But for people like me who have never been aware of the arcade game, how do you get them to pay attention to Killer Queen Black and raise awareness that, hey, this is a game worth checking out?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a hard thing to do. You know, but luckily we have a great community. And you know, they're our biggest evangelists, whether it be, you know, them running events like newbie tournaments, like, you know, if you're in our Discord, if you go to kqbdiscord.com, they'll run events specifically for new players. They're very welcoming. They're evangelists for the game, and that's probably our biggest way to get the word out about Killer Queen Black. That, and obviously, you know, being on Game Pass sure helps. The work Nintendo did with us, so we're not going to be taking ads out during the Super Bowl or anything like that. And so a lot of it has to be word of mouth. And like I said, I think that we're lucky enough to have opportunities like this to speak about the game, as well as have a wonderful, wonderful community that really helps bring in new players and welcome them.
I think a big boon to the game is the inclusion of crossplay, because it lets those established audiences have a new influx of people to play with. And the people who are new to the series, they have people that they can learn against. And it's not just a bunch of idiots who don't know what they're doing playing against each other.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And we can't start over, we can't build a new community every platform. And in this day and age, there's no reason things can't be crossplay. Everybody's mm-hmm. pretty much opened up. For a game like ours, it just makes perfect sense. And Mike and the engineering team, like being able to build out all that stuff, is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was also kind of like serendipitous how all of that aligned, like when Nintendo approached us and expressed interest in bringing it to the Switch, it was like right around the time where cross-platform was starting to become a thing, Nintendo was allowing it, Xbox was starting to allow it. I think PlayStation was still like, nah, I'm not really too sure about that. But I think, they eventually came around. So that was a big deal for us too.
Yeah, I love crossplay. I love the fact that it's finally becoming more prevalent in our community, gaming in general.
For sure. For
multiplayer games like this, it's there's pretty much no reason not to have it, really. Like, save the system cell for the single player experiences, but everybody wins when you have people to play your game with. So make it happen.
Yeah, I think it makes it easier for indie developers like us to sell multiplayer, because it's like, it's really hard. It's like our game's difficult, right? Because it's eight players you have to match together at once, right? The bigger mm-hmm. pool you have to pull from, the easier that gets. So if you're just locked in, what's that?
I can honestly vouch for the fact that we've reviewed a number of games on this very show where it's an indie game and the appeal is clearly multiplayer. And it was like, what is your take on it? I was like, this would be fantastic if I had friends. Can't play with anybody.
Right.
Multiplayer, totally. Like, crossplay would have totally saved a number of games. So I'm glad this one has it.
Yeah, and we were fortunate. It's very low friction in our game. Like, you don't really realize you're playing with crossplay people unless the platform dictates it. Like, I think Xbox has some rules around like what the profile picture is. So it's like, or like the Switch definitely does. So you definitely know that you're playing against Switch players, if that makes sense. Like if you're on PC.
I noticed while playing on Xbox, I saw another player had a little world icon next to him. I'm assuming that was, he was on a different platform maybe.
Yep. That was either a Switch player or a PC player. Yep.
Gotcha. Kind of figured that's what it meant.
The other thing about, you know, when we talk about like every game should be crossplay and stuff like that, you know, like what's unique about Killer Queen Black and is, you know, it's not a first person shooter. You're not using the mouse to aim, right? There's really no advantage to being on one platform versus another, you know. I mean, I guess the case, somebody could probably make a case that the keyboard is the best way to play Killer Queen Black, but you know, I don't think so. And you know, any way that you kind of put it, you know, there is no advantage to being on a specific platform, and you know, that's not unique to Killer Queen Black, but it is something that, you know, we take advantage of, you know, with crossplay.
So one question worth asking, this is just like a general sell in a sense. So as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of multiplayer games out there that people get onto and they compete and they play for bragging rights and yada yada yada. But for the folks that are listening to this and they're like, oh, another online multiplayer game, what would you say would make yours a pretty solid bet to say, hey, I know there's a lot of options, but here's why you should check our game out, at least right now or sometime very soon.
Yeah, I'll take that one. You know, I think the shortest answer is I would challenge anyone to find anything that is like it, right? It is a pretty unique game. And you know, it's one that you can get into very easily. It's one that you can play with your friends on the couch next to you or across the country. It doesn't matter, right? It's a very social game. And if you've ever played Mario or a platformer or any kind of, you know, game with that jumping mechanic, which almost everybody has, right? You can play Killer Queen Black. Like you can get into it right away. It's short. It's a, you know, so the time commitment on the games, I think matches on average are around 5 minutes, right? We do that on purpose. They're intense. And so, you know, you can kind of go through them, you know, at the pace that you want. And, it's something special and unique that I haven't seen anywhere else. And that would be my longer pitch on why people should try the game sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it actually did remind me a lot of the original Mario Brothers arcade game.
Uh-huh.
Because it had the wraparound and everything like that. And there were, like, you know, a couple different ways to win original Mario Brothers. So that's not bad if that's, you know, that's a comparison point.
We'll take it. We've heard Joust as well. You know, I think there's some obvious parallels there.
Yeah, the Queens definitely make me think of Joust.
Yeah. The most flattering one that we hear is Towerfall, right? We love that game.
Oh, okay.
And played a lot of Towerfall. So when people are like, hey, man, this reminds me of Towerfall, we're instantly like, yeah, that's a super huge compliment.
Oh, yeah. That game is fantastic. And it's also got that whole, like, you just pick it up and play. Exactly. Like, you don't have to feel stressed about it.
Exactly.
You know, I've never played Towerfall. How weird am I?
Oh, wow.
Very. We got to fix that.
Oh, you definitely have to fix that.
I'm a terrible person.
Fucking yeah.
Shame
on you. Could you imagine a world where you could be a terrible person, but it's so easily remedied by just playing Towerfall? Like, if you just do that, you become great. And we love you for it. So, if that's your.
Someone else we love, Hazy JT, just gifted a sub in chat to you, Chris.
Oh, well, thank you, Hazy JT.
So thank you, Hazy, for the sub. Back to chat. Carnage in chat has a pretty interesting question that I have to piggyback off of. He said that he saw a lot of names with asterisks online. What is the story behind them? And I personally, my entire name is asterisked out.
Yeah. Mike, you want to take that one or
I mean, there, you know, when you launch a game on a platform, some of these platforms, you know, they're very particular in how you should present user generated content, and rightfully so, right? You're reaching a large audience there.
Plus we're rated E for everybody.
And we're rated E for everybody. So we were a little too, I don't know, loose on what we considered a bad word. right? So it's catching stuff that, you know, it's like false positives. So Adam, the other developer on the team, he's, I think he's got that wrapped up, actually. So that should be coming out in a patch pretty soon.
Nice. Oh, actually, mine was also a full asterisk. I was like, what's wrong with my name? I thought it was pretty good.
Yep. Yep, yeah, sorry about that.
It's super aggressive.
Yeah.
Soon Penis Panic will be able to be played on the screen.
Bad word filters, like earmuffs, everyone. Close your eyes.
Yep.
Oh, man, if you don't have earmuffs with this show, I think you missed a memo somewhere. Well, Cole's not here, so we're not as bad.
I only swear when there's a humorous element to it.
I appreciate that.
Like, yeah, and honestly, this whole time we've been talking, I've been watching matches just go, and they honestly have never stopped being entertaining. Like, I do want to ask though, if you know at the top of your head, how many levels are there, and will there be more added?
Yeah, so there's seven right now, we plan on adding a level pretty much every quarter, if not faster. Once we get through our porting push, which we're getting through right now as a company, you know, it's back to content mode and content creation, and we're really excited about that. We got some really neat ideas.
So what is the porting process? I'm guessing you brought it to Xbox. Is there PlayStation in the mix? Is that coming, or is it going to be content creation after that, and then possibly move on to there?
No, so next, it's been announced is Stadia. So we're coming out on Google Stadia. And
interesting.
Yep. You know, I mean, it works surprisingly well. I mean, you have to have an internet connection, right? Like, you got to have a badass internet connection. I hope that players know that when they get into bed with Stadia. But if you've got the right connection, it's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, I played the Immortals demo when they had that on Stadia, and it worked near flawlessly. They got a good product there. It's just Google just kind of gave up on it too early, I think. But as long as games keep coming to it, that's what's important.
Yeah, exactly, right? And like, yeah, I was reading some article the other day. And of course, I can't reference it or remember who wrote it, so apologies. But basically, you know, it was saying, it's like, I don't think Google knew what it was doing when it was getting into the games business, right? Like, it is hard to make video games, right? And it is a very different type of, you know, skill set than putting together these amazing, efficient services like they do at scale, right? And providing all the infrastructure and search at scale. You know, and then you move on to something that is like, you know, the equivalent of, you know, you're making an interactive movie. It's quite a different kind of iterative design experience. And this author's, you know, thought was, is that, you know, it just in the end, they weren't able to kind of reconcile those two different expertise.
Now, it's a weird situation, but.
Oh, go
tell us more about the Stadia release. Is there any new content planned for the Stadia release or anything special for that version?
Yeah, so no new content as of yet, but we integrate with a ton of Stadia features. You know, it feels like it belongs in Stadia, just like we worked really hard on the Xbox, you know, to kind of hook into all of the features in like the shell and creating parties and stuff like that. If you're familiar as a Stadia player with partying up with people and accepting invites to join a game or whatever, it'll feel really great. Nice. Right? Because you can create a custom match and then bring up the Stadia shell, invite somebody to it, they get the invite, it launches the game, goes right into the custom match, and you're playing together. So
now, is there a way to invite people across platform?
Yeah, totally. So that was one of the things I was going to go back to your previous question on, of what I think a good selling point for the game is. Something we worked really hard on was, we know it's like a team-centric game, right? You know, you have teams of four, and you can solo queue. So you can go into the matchmaker by yourself and roll the die, and hopefully you get a good queen and all of that. But we also created this party system that allows you to, you know, send friend invites to people, and you have your friend list, and you can create a party together before you go into the matchmaker, so you can actually team up and go in and play with your friends. And so if you want to add to your question, if you want to add a friend that's on another platform, Just tell them to open up their friends list and they'll see their Liquid ID. It's their username with a hash and then four digits. You just enter that into our friend system and search for them, and then you could send them an invite.
Cool. So mine is nine asterisks and then four numbers. So if you want to search for me, I will get you the four numbers.
Right. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Well, it's good that you're able to have cross-platform parties and invite. It blows my mind that we're at that point in technology that we could do that, but it's like, why haven't we always done that?
Totally. Yeah. Well, you know, these platforms want you to buy into their system, right?
And, yeah.
But I think like with indie games, there was an argument like, why not allow these poor indie developers to have a bigger audience and go across platform, and then, you know, the larger titles too. But yeah, and we're fortunate enough that, like, you know, we have a voice chat system in game, and that also works cross play, right? So you could be on the Switch with a headset talking to your Xbox buddy, whatever, or PC.
In the case of a Switch person, like, wow, I can use my headset for something.
Right, yes. Exactly, yeah. Because, like, before that, didn't they have this weird system where you, like, had an app on your phone or something? Yeah, yeah.
That still is, like, the system, right? It was just for us. We were like, no, man, we want to go crossplay all the way. That includes voice. We had to use a different provider.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, there was, like, a part of me where I was, like, on one hand, I get it. Because, like, as long as the quote-unquote savings are passed to me, I don't need it because I'll use Discord. But at the same time, for stuff like this, you kind of need it. And if you're not rocking Discord, I'd almost rather be like, look, just give me, like, a $10 additional cost to let me use your service instead of making me use my friggin' cell phone and an app.
Nintendo's voice setup left a lot to be desired, but... Hey, your solution worked, and it works cross-platform, and that's the important part.
Damn Skippy.
Carnage again in chat is asking, because he's an achievement whore, any plans for new achievements or gamer score added in a title update?
Like, I knew someone was going to ask that question.
The sigh said enough.
No, I mean, it was, yeah, I'm just, like, he's got all... 39 already? Like, that's,
He just wants more.
He just wants more?
Yes.
Gotcha. All right, man. Hey, we'll think on it. Tell him if he's got any ideas to hit us up in the Discord.
There you go, Carnage. Jump on their Discord.
I mean, at this point, if you got 39 achievements already for the game of this scope, I feel like 40 is going to have to be something like get 1,000 wins by snail.
Don't give him any ideas, Pernell. That's a mean one.
Now we got 40 achievements, Carnage.
How about a pacifist achievement where you win either the grape gathering or the snail, but without killing any of the opponents?
Dude, I love that one. I absolutely love that one.
That would be really hard to do.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was kind of like one of my questions, but I didn't know how to answer. It was like, you know, any possibility of like altering or making like some kind of alternate thing where it's like a pacifist like game of this sort, which I don't think I've ever seen before.
Yeah, so like this is something we added after launch, but if you create a custom match, we allow you to change the rules.
Oh, okay.
Right, so you can like remove the berries, you could prevent runners from getting swords, and you can prevent the queens from killing anything, I believe.
Oh, so you can make this on your own. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't check out the custom stuff.
And we have a low gravity mode too. So,
ooh, no. What other weird stuff? Do you have a big head mode?
Bobblehead mode. What was it? We need to put that code in from NBA Jam to give you the bobblehead.
Totally.
You should be able to unlock Bill Clinton as well.
Boom shakalaka.
I think one other one is you can make the snail go really fast.
You can adjust the speed of the snail.
And that, like, to the extent where, like, instead of the snail just drops off of a ledge, it actually kind of like cruises for a bit. you get some air time.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool to see a match like that. Also, I'm assuming though, when a person joins the match, they already know that it's set to like speed snail mode. They're not going to get like shell shocked when the guy gets in the sense like, oh shit, and so he rips across the screen.
You know, that's a funny question. We dithered on that a lot. And what we really wanted to do was put, like, I think Towerfall does something like this, actually, talking about Towerfall again, where you can, like, you add modifiers to the game, and, like, before the match starts, each one has an icon. But we didn't get to that. The best you can do, I think, is open up the rules while the party leader is setting up the match, and you can kind of see him update real time. But, yeah, it could throw you off guard, for sure. It was funny, like, doing the snail speed one, right? Because it wasn't designed to do that, and the levels weren't designed to compensate for that. So we had all these weird bugs where, like, you'd be riding the snail, and you'd go so fast that you'd go into the hive and, like, deposit a berry while riding the snail, and it, like, totally broke everything.
What happened there?
Pieces of code that never should have touched each other.
Pretty much, yeah.
Across the streams.
Yeah.
Right. Opened a wormhole.
Yeah. Interesting bugs during development too. Like, this is our first game, right? So it's a different beast, like, programming wise. But, like, we had this really weird bug where, like, a runner would just turn into a berry fountain. Like, their sprite would disappear and they would just generate a berry, like, every frame. And so, like, the whole level would just fill out. It was like a ball pit, you know. That was a wild one. And then eventually crashed the server, of course.
I want to see that in action.
Right.
Where I saw that he was doing that, I was like, I could just stand in the hive and just, like, start populating the berry piss, but why do that when I can break the match instead?
Why we can't have nice things.
That's right.
People have to break shit.
There's one question I thought about, too. So, like, have there been any thoughts for, like, any sort of, like, additional power-up abilities to be added to the game? Or do you feel as though it's kind of got that fine tuning where to add one more ability might just break it?
Oh, yeah, we couldn't just, like, drop one in there tomorrow, right? Like, it would break it. It would totally break it. But we, you know, we've had all sorts of concepts, like some, you know, like downright just, like, wacky, with, you know, a ball on a rope, like an actual rope simulated in game, to a lance that, like, you stab upwards with, and it could stab through platforms. I wouldn't say that one's dead. I'm not promising anything, but, like, that has never really truly died in terms of design ideas that we've prototyped and not heeded. You know, but, like, yeah, like, there's all sorts of things that we played with and continue to play with. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see as the game evolves. But our focus in the immediate future is just get more maps in there, and then take a look at what kind of, like, map rotation that we could do on a seasonal basis.
We had one early on where your runner would turn into, like, a ticking time bomb.
You had like
10 seconds, and then you'd, like, start flashing, and then you would explode. But I think we also made it, like, kill your teammates.
We did make it kill your teammates. Yeah, we couldn't, like, reconcile that in our brains.
Right.
Yeah, it makes sense. That needs to be as dangerous as possible, because the payoff is really good too.
Totally. Yeah. I think it'd be cool to, like, if we couldn't balance out, like, a new upgrade, you know, for all the maps, to have, like, a special map that maybe had, like, you know, featured something different, you know?
Oh, for sure.
It might be cool.
And of course,
anything in mind?
Honestly, no. I mean, like, we're always spitballing, but it's been a lot of, like, lately, it's been a lot of porting, like, getting it on Xbox, getting it on Stadia, like Matt was saying, and we need to circle back and get more into the creative juices.
I feel like one tough one or oddity would, I'm not even sure how it would work in this game, because you would definitely need special maps for it, but have a map or two where you could actually just, with the push of a button, you invert the screen. And it would just mess everybody up. But, of course, everything would also fall from the ceiling to the floor, from the floor to the ceiling. So I could see that being people, damn it, now hit the switch, I can't do shit. And then you got to wait it out, figure out what you need to do.
Yeah, that
would be amazing.
That could be interesting, because all the berries on the floor would go to the ceiling and then possibly go into the hive and win the game.
Mm-hmm.
Roll around.
Right, because that's where the berries end up, right? Because you can throw them. You couldn't throw them in the arcade game. That was another thing that we changed. That was
a smart add-on, yeah, because the first time I saw you could do it, I was like, oh, that's fantastic. If you're, like, in a rush, like, just throw it and hope it goes.
And you know what's amazing about that is, like, you know, when you create a feature like that, you're testing it as a developer. It's like, yep, it it goes, it throws when I push this button. Great. And then you give it to gamers and they're like, we're going to just master this down to the pixel. And no. You got, there's a channel in our Discord, I think it's like all about berries, where people like post their best berry runs. Like, it's all perfect throws. It's insane. Oh, what was the other thing we didn't anticipate? So you can change your button mappings and you can bind your jump button to also throw at the same time. And we didn't actually intend that. So like pro tip, if you want to, you know, consistency in your berry throws, you can do that. You can get like the same arc every time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hooping.
Oh, like they were getting mad at us too. Like people in the community, they're like, your maps aren't symmetric with the pixel art. And we're like, why does that matter? And they're like, because when we practice these berry throws, it's like, it's when the foot of the runner is right by this little flower on the left side, but that flower is not on the right side. We're like, well, sorry.
Master my game a little better. I don't know what to tell you.
You went beyond what we expected this game to do. So you're on your own, buddy.
It's so funny how things like that happen, you know, like once they get a hold of it, they break it is the first thing they do. Let's be honest.
So y'all, of course, had an emergency flower meeting and discussed how you're going to be placing flowers in the future.
Exactly.
So what is next for Liquidbit besides flower placement?
Well, you know, like I said, it's we're going to be making maps. We're going to continue looking at, you know, other ways to support Killer Queen Black. You know, it's come a long way since we released, and we have, I think we pushed like 10 patches for the game, or 11 patches for the game in a year and a half.
Wow.
And we've added a ton of new features, and we're continuing to grow the game and grow the player base and look at new ways and new partnerships to do that. But we've got a lot of cool things coming up, and we're pretty excited about it.
Nice. Any other game projects in the works at Liquidbit, or are you guys just focused on Killer Queen Black?
We've always got ideas. We've always got prototypes kind of floating around, you know, for things that we're looking to try. But that's just what they are, and that's just what game studios do. So we're still 100% dedicated to Killer Queen Black, to building it out.
Nice. Something I wanted to ask earlier, but Pernell drags us off topic constantly.
Hey.
Did you guys experience any challenges or struggles with the whole COVID situation?
Well, yeah.
like any specific ways that it impacted you, or like really put a dent in development? Because we've talked to some developers who were like, well, we did most of our work from home anyway, so it didn't really affect us that much.
Oh no, we are different, especially on the engineering side. You know, we have a lot of folks who are remote, but the engineering team, you know, has consistently been in person, in office type deal, and we've been working that way for the last 7 years together. You know, so we had actually just moved into a really nice office. We were all pretty jazzed about it. We were there for maybe what, 2.5 months. So it's like, We moved out in the middle of March, like when everything kind of went bad, and haven't set foot in it since.
Damn.
Yeah. So we had to learn, you know, how to work online, how to communicate better, you know, just be more organized in project management, you know, that kind of thing, right? All the different ways that you can convey information that you used to be able to do in person so easily, right?
And, yeah.
Yeah, and it's hard, and it slows things down. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and it made the Xbox port particularly difficult because, you know, we have like 3 dev kits, I think. And unfortunately, you know, Adam had to have all of them when he was doing that, the porting work, because he needs 3 live devices to test on, to test like the different, you know, multiplayer features, creating parties, stuff like that. So he really had to take on a brunt of that, where if not for COVID, we all would have been in the same office together. We just had the dev kits kind of sitting on a shelf, you know, so anybody could use one if they needed it. But yeah, that made it stressful for Adam. He really had to do most of the Xbox porting work, and he definitely could have used a hand there. But
Yeah, we're constantly like running hardware back and forth between houses, right? You know, because everyone's gotta act and have the gear, you know, that they need, and we don't have enough for everybody, right? Yeah, so it's like, yeah, we're shuttling around, you know, different pieces of hardware, controllers, networking equipment, things like that, you know, whereas before it was all just right there.
Matt had to create he got our server basically in your other room, right? Matt, you like, set like a VPN and all that.
Yeah, I had to create a whole little liquid bit network.
Right. That was fun. You took down your house's whole internet for like a day. Your wife to work. Your wife had to work. You were like sweating balls, I remember you telling me.
What's the rest of that story?
Well, you know, I'm sure it didn't. It's blanked from my mind because it didn't end well.
Pure wipe.
So yeah, to answer your question, yeah, COVID sucks. It's hard. It's definitely slowed us down.
What do you guys do? You have any plans for when things like wind down with what's going on? I'm not sure where you guys are located, though. I don't know what restrictions you guys have in your areas.
Yeah, we work out of downtown Chicago, so you know, when it's safe to go back. I don't know when that'll be or what that'll look like, but whenever we all kind of deem that it's safe, quote unquote, to go back, like, dude, yeah, I think we all want to get back together.
Yeah, I miss dealing with people, interacting with humans.
100%. I like miss my commute, honestly. I never thought I'd hear myself saying that, but like just being on the train, you know, and being around people and like reading a book, you know, and simple things like that you kind of miss when you haven't done it in a while, you know.
Oh, yeah. I used to do most of my music listening in the car, and there's not many places to go anymore, so I don't get to listen to as much music.
Right, exactly.
How it is. Speaking of music, Power Glove, how did that come about?
You know, we wanted this from the beginning. We wanted this heavy metal like vibe to the game soundtrack, and you know, we experimented by, you know, playing just like a lot of different artists and songs, you know, behind the title screen and all that kind of good stuff. And when we really kind of started looking around, it was like, okay, well, I think we want like live music, or like we want, you know, like, you know, recorded music by like a band. Like Power Glove does some really cool stuff. I don't remember if it was Chris Wallace, our game designer, or it was Josh or Nick or who brought them up, but you know, like, it was like insta-fit, you know, like, oh yeah, man, like these guys have this really cool sound. I really like who they are personally, you know, and it was like, all right, let's just reach out. And so, you know, it was an email later, and, you know, we were, you know, in touch and working with them.
That's really cool. Pernell, I know you're big into the music games.
I am. And I did not realize this was Power Glove, but I did realize that the OST is fantastic. A nice bit of oomph when you get a win off. It's like, yes, that's right. Rock me off into the sunset on my amazing snail. I deserve this.
Matt, was it Bumble Bash that Power Glove was kind enough to play at?
Yeah, it was the last Bumble Bash, right? In Chattanooga.
Yeah. So Bumble Bash is a tournament that Bumble Bear, the creators of Killer Queen Arcade, held every year, and Power Glove came and they played the title screen music, and they sounded great, by the way.
That's
they
awesome.
They were awesome. Yeah, people were really into it. It was super cool. I think did they stick around and play some other jams, Matt?
Oh yeah, no, they had a pretty big set. It was cool.
Oh, they didn't come and just play our song and
bang. Oh no,
just one trip, song. Like, well, that's our cut. Later.
That would be so shitty. Just set everything up, have all this production, play one song.
You've been a great audience. Okay, it takes us longer to dismantle this than to play our set. That's great.
It's one of those things where I realized it was a stupid question, like midway through the sentence.
I've seen bands do that before, though.
Really?
Yeah, doing like really tiny, tiny sets.
It would have been an interesting little trivia bit, though, right? If it actually did play out the way it's like, fun fact, guy, they only played one song. You don't understand why either.
I played a 12-minute set before.
What is that, with, like, three songs?
One long song?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like three songs, I think.
Jeez. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing, though. Were you the only person playing that, or was there someone that came after or before you, too?
No, we were in a lineup. The sound people got there late or something like that, so we were set up for a long time, and then they sound checked us, and then they like went away for a while, and then they came back and told us we could start, and then we started, and then like two songs in, they were like, okay, last song.
Oh no.
Oh jeez.
Yeah. Some things I don't miss about live shows.
Speaking of live shows, before the whole in the before times, I guess, did you take the game to any conventions and have it on display at stuff?
Yeah, we were for, I think, what was it, 2019, Mike? We were all over the place. We were at both PAXs. We were at E3 in 2018.
Did you guys ever do MAGFest?
We never did MAGFest.
Oh, you got to do MAGFest.
You know, when they have one again. Yeah,
if it ever exists again.
I can definitely say that game room would light up for that game, or for Killer Queen Black, I think. Especially if it was one of those games they actually had kind of playing towards the entrance or something. Where people walking, like, all this crazy crap going on. People were screaming. Because people would be screaming. Getting their asses handed to them by a snail rider.
Yeah, those were always the funnest matches whenever we did show off the game, you know, where it's like they got it. Like they play like a match and like, wait, it's not really setting in. Usually took like a match, two matches, and they're like, oh, I get it. And then it could get super competitive.
And but, like, you get the crowds forming.
Oh, totally. Yeah. The people are, exactly, from behind the couch. But like, I'll tell you, showing it at those shows, though, it was stressful, man. Cause like, Matt gave the elevator pitch, right? And he's like, I'll tell you, we've been pitching this game for 4 years. We still don't have it down. We would have to give that same pitch over and over, trying to explain the rules. Nobody's paying attention, right? So we start the game. He's like, how do I fly? I'm like, I told you. Tap the A button.
Push the fucking button. What's your problem?
Play Mario, asshole. You're at a game cup.
It was work, though, man. It was work showing the game off, but it was so worth it seeing people's reaction. It was like the first time anybody outside of our friends ever played it, too. So it's like seeing that reaction from people, it's like, oh, this is why we're doing this. It's super.
You mentioned flying. There is a quick accessibility question I had, and I know Cole would be interested in this. I saw on Steam forum someone was asking if there's ever going to be an option to hold the button to fly instead of tapping it to fly. Is that something you guys are looking into?
You know, we looked into that a few times, and you know, I there was a couple of ways that we looked at being able to do it. I think we need to revisit it again. You know, we had things where it was like, you know, we would use the analog trigger, right? And you know, we could, depending on how far you pulled it, you could flap at a certain rate, or you could climb, you know, things like that. It never really worked very well. But it seems like, you know, there is fatigue associated with playing Killer Queen Black, right? Because it is a tap heavy game. There's no doubt about that. I'd even like to see it myself. I think we're going to probably release something pretty simple and then iterate on it with a lot of user feedback, because it's a surprisingly tough one to get right. Amazingly so, right? It sounds so simple, but it's not if you really want to use it as a competitive control mechanism.
Yeah, I don't know how games work, so just the fact that you guys make shit move on screen is magical to me.
So. Wizardry.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything about the game that you guys wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
No, man. I mean, we appreciate the opportunity here. This has been a ton of fun, covered a lot of the game. You know, I hope people check it out. It's on Game Pass right now, also on Steam and Nintendo Switch. It's oddly addicting once you get into it. you know, and there's some real things that are I believe are accessible and fun for everybody. So, yeah, appreciate the time.
Well, where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing and all of that fun stuff? Give us all the information where we could keep track of you.
Oh, okay. You can follow us on Twitter at Killer Queen BLK, Killer Queen Black. You can also follow us on Twitter at Liquid Bit Games. You can hit our website, liquidbit.com. You can hit Killer Queen Black's website at www.killerqueenblack.com. You know, I believe we've got the Facebooks and an Instagrams and a what have yous out there as well. But like those are the main places. We're pretty active on Twitter, you know, and Discord, obviously kqbdiscord.com is a great place to go, learn about the game, meet members of the community and all that kind of stuff. You know, that, you know, if you're really looking for like organized play and meeting new cool people and playing with them and getting help with the game, like that is the place to be. And that's also probably the best place to get information and announcements about the game as well.
Nice. I'm not much of a Discord person, but I think I'm going to have to jump on yours and at least lurk and hang out and watch some videos of people throwing berries in really cool, fucked up ways.
Oh, yeah, man.
Totally. Come hang out.
Well, I guess that is it for our chat. Matt, Mike, it's been awesome having you guys on the show.
Hope you're not sweating too bad from our hard-hitting questions.
I hope you're sweating a lot because that's exercise.
No, it was great. Super chill. We had a lot of fun talking to you guys.
Yeah, it's been a blast having you on. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with some more show. We'll listen to some music right now. We'll be right back. Do either of you have any final words to end the interview?
Just really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you to everybody who's out there playing and supporting Killer Queen Black. And yeah, look for more in the future. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. Thanks for sticking with us. Another big thanks to Mike and Matt at Liquid Bit for coming on and chilling with us. Chris Purnell, you're still here. We got some reviews. Here.
Don't sound so disappointed. Jeez, we wanted to beat.
I am disappointed because Cole's still not here. We still don't have her here. Good news. She'll be back next episode.
Excellent. Yeah, we definitely missed her. You missed her accent. And I still haven't played Ori, but I might start it just to celebrate her return. I could. You don't know me.
I kind of know you.
That is true. But you don't know my Ori-isms.
No, I don't. But I know that you have a game to talk about. You ready?
That is true. Yeah, actually, I'm ready. Yeah,
all right. Well, first game to talk about tonight is called Zombie Army 4 Dead War, developed and published by Rebellion, released February 18th on Steam for $49.99. Hitler's hordes are back for more in this spine-chilling shooter from the makers of Sniper Elite 4, abominable occult enemies, epic weapons, and a harrowing new campaign for 1-4 players await in 1940s Europe as you fight to save humankind from undead Armageddon. Purnell, tell us about Zombie Army 4 Dead War.
You just told me something about it. You know, these were some Sniper Elite guys, but that lends a lot of weight to it because this is actually a pretty fun game. So I haven't been much for FPS games in a long time, usually because I suck at them. But it was interesting to give this one a try because I'm a sucker for games that do the whole like FPS games that do the zombie thing. But I guess this is more of a third person over the shoulder, but still that do the zombie thing. But, you know, differently, not the usual shamblers. And this game does it well. The whole idea is that it's broken out over a course of like 9 or 10 chapters. And each chapter has multiple levels in it, broken up by checkpoints. And it's a narrative campaign where you end up choosing a character as available from the roster of characters in the game. And it's up to 4 players, which is kind of cool. And as you go into each level, you go through a series of like usually some light narrative stuff, and I mean light because the story is not the main emphasis. The emphasis is on the crazy shit. and then once you get past those general scenarios, you end up like, you know, running through the stage with your goal being to fulfill a variety of objectives and eventually reach the checkpoint being a safe room. Sound familiar? It should, because I feel like it definitely invoked positive memories of Left 4 Dead, which is a game franchise to love back in the day on the 360. So as you're going through levels, your primary adversaries are zombies. And the zombies come in a variety of rather weird forms sometimes. You have basic shamblers, but then you also end up getting like zombies that are kind of shambling and also wielding guns that are just like spraying them wildly. You get like exploding zombies to explode on you. You get like military general zombies that can summon other zombies. You got freaking military tank zombies. It's weird shit. and throughout the process of doing the fighting them, you have a decent sized arsenal for taking them out. You're usually rotating between 3 types of guns, a pistol gun, a shotgun, and like a sniper rifle style gun. And there's a variety of different firearms that are classified within these, you know, these groupings. And when you start a level, you can choose which of the guns you've unlocked you want to start with. So sometimes you'll also just find them on the map. Like you might kill a guy and it's like, hey, you want to swap this gun for that gun? Typical shooting style gameplay concept there. But one thing I kind of like about this game is the fact that you have those 3 guns. Each of the guns has their own stats. And as you play through stages, you find upgrade kits. They're like one of the collectibles on a stage. And at the end of it, and at each checkpoint, there's a workbench set up where you can use those upgrade kits to modify the gun and add like perks to them. And like, for example, one of my favorite ones was one of the shotguns I had, because all the perk setups are unique for each gun. So if you upgrade one type of shotgun and find another type of shotgun, that's got its own layout and you won't have the upgrade from the old shotgun on this new one. So something to keep in mind. But I liked one of the upgrades where the shotgun fired electrified bullets. So not only was I getting that extra oomph in my shots, but it kind of got a nice little gyration of shocking on the enemies too. It was great. So you'll be basically doing a lot of shifting around with the different guns there. And there's also like, you know, sub weapons too, mines and grenades that you can kind of lob and throw. Now, something about it I thought was pretty cool. I wasn't 100% sure on like what was triggering them to start showing up, but what would happen is like I'd be like using my pistol, for example, and after a certain number of kills, either by just general kills or by a combo meter, which is also in the game, as you kill guys in succession, you build a combo meter up. I unlock certain abilities. So, for example, with your your normal attacks, just any gun, if you get a combo meter of up to 10 without missing a shot and letting it drop off, you unlock a one-time use super melee strike, which basically lets you like just like maul a dude instead of like having to do the tap thing. if you use your pistol, or at least particularly if you use the pistol enough, you unlock a perk where when you charge it up, you can kind of like do like a mass like lock on and just like spray everybody with a bullet. So it's like super headshots or whatever. And every type of gun has something like that, which I thought was pretty friggin' awesome. So it's that incentive to be like, hey, here's that one more perk you can do. But if you play it in a certain way, you get a cool perk that makes this gun a little bit special compared to using the other gun. One thing I thought was pretty cool also in regards to like a lot of the combat is that these are all zombies. And typically when you play these games, a lot of times your general goal is like, okay, I need to clear this room and then move on. But while you're fighting, sometimes they'll just get resurrected and then you got to kill them again. So it adds a little bit of extra chaos to the combat where you're like, okay, got this little thing going on. I got this clear. And then you're in your sniper scope and it's zoomed in. And I remember you hear something go,
And it's clear that there's a guy resurrecting right behind you. It's like, well, shit, can't stay here anymore. Got to keep moving. But I like that mechanic that kept things on your toes. There is a lot of game in here, too, in the sense that, again, like I said, there's like 9 chapters. And each chapter has multiple stages within it, and they are actually fairly lengthy levels. And each individual level within a chapter has like a bonus goal attached to it, aside from the general collecting of items, all of which generate experience points. And as you get enough experience points, your character will level up and rank up, which then unlocks various character perks and various weapon perks and gun skins if you're into that kind of thing and all that kind of stuff. Just get this out of the way, by the way. There is a DLC in this game. There's a lot of DLC available. They have season fucking passes. If you're not the type of person that likes that kind of stuff, good news is there's enough game here that you don't really have to care. Like, there's a decent amount of game that you would never have to touch if you don't feel like it. However, if you've gone through the entire campaign and the horde mode and you still feel like you need to kill new zombies in new places with new guns, well, you can buy that shit. And it's available to you. There's enough game here that you can stay busy for a long ass time if you so far deem yourself fit to do so.
And games like this are usually built on replayability as well.
Exactly. And it's perfect for that too, because I feel like it's not as, say, strategic as Left 4 Dead, where you were like, okay, if I die, go find me in a closet or whatever. But I do feel like it still has a similar level of like just drop it and say, hey, I want to hang out with my friends and just like run through a few stages and see how well we do, or also do a quick horde mode run or something. This has that, I think. And I do like that. I'm not sure if any other version of this had it or not, but I like the fact that you can scale the enemy count. So, like I said, it's 1 to 4 players, and there's like a default. When you step to go to the level, you can choose if you want to say, for example, have like the default enemy count. So like, let's say like this room has 10 zombies in it, and that was how the level was originally designed to be. You can just choose that. But they also are modified to say if you're playing 4 players, you can pick the 4 player version of it, and you'll have an enemy count tailored towards 4 players, which is freaking cool. So you can basically say, we're playing with 2 people, we want a zombie loadout for 4. Just kind of stress yourself out.
Oh, man.
But it's just a fantastic idea for that. And the customization is cool. And it's not trying to like reinvent the wheel or anything, but it is taking the wheels that it does have on it, and it's coasting pretty smoothly. And one other thing worth noting, too, just for a personal Purnell edit, is the fact that this game actually made me use the laptop that I've been holding on to, and it actually runs very nicely. Like, it was butter smooth. The voices were great. I experienced no slowdown, no crashes, and that's usually what I most fear about PC gaming, is crap like that happening. I experienced nothing. It was a perfect run. It was great.
Sweet. So $50 on it, what do you say?
I think it's 100% worth it. Worth your time, worth your fun. Grab it and go.
Cool.
Kill zombies.
Zombie killing is always good.
That's right. Especially when they're Nazi zombies. I mean, you can't lose.
Yeah. Seriously, fuck Nazis.
Damn straight.
Indeed.
Yeah, see, Chris agrees.
I've been saying it.
I look over at Chris like, you better agree.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Tiny Shot, developed by Zax, published by Head Up, released February 19th on Steam for $9.99. Tiny Shot is a 2D arcade shooting game where he plays this little creature who signed a deal with the devil to get him his lost horn and earn love and fame in return. Chris, tell us about Tiny Shot.
Oh, is that what the story is? There's an intro you can watch, but the way that this game tells stories, like in the intro and between levels, is it just drops a bunch of Polaroids on the table, and then you're just supposed to infer from the pictures like what exactly is going on. I could tell that he made a deal with the devil and that he's going after the devil, but I didn't notice the horn thing. But oh well. Okay, so this is a it's a roguelike platforming, kind of a twin stick shooter, I guess you could call it. But it's side scrolling, so, you know, a little different there. And it was developed by one person, which is kind of cool. and a game developer from Syria, which I had actually never, I don't know any game developers from Syria. So by way of Norway, of course, because Syria is not doing great right now.
Yeah.
Thanks to us and many, many other countries. Anyways.
Deeper, no, we got to Syria after all.
See, that's why we're glad to have you back, Chris, because we can get to Syria when you're here.
Is that a cereal pun?
A little. Maybe.
It's a war-torn country. Okay, whatever.
I know.
We laugh because otherwise we cry. So this game is, according to the developer and, you know, every other, you know, thing, just by looking at it, it is highly stylized and kind of based on the works of the developer of Binding of Isaac and Super Meat Boy. So the graphics of it have that cartoony kind of, like, you know, bloody and disgusting, like, you know, style. And of course the star of the show is, his name is literally Tiny, and he's just like this little guy about half the size of a kitchen knife, because, the weapon you start with is a kitchen knife and it's twice your size. So, but, yeah, so the game just kind of drops you in. You have 5 levels to get through, and enemies come in waves at you through, you know, just in all kinds of directions, which are, indicated on the screen, which is nice. So they don't really, like, come out to surprise you, which is a good thing, because initially you're going to get hit with one, you're going to get killed with one hit, pretty much all the time. But you do have, like, 5 lives to start with. And, of course, as you progress through the game, more things become accessible to you. And, you know, you can, of course, improve your loadout as well as purchase better weapons throughout the game. So the way that you purchase stuff is that every time you complete a wave of enemies, you will get the option to visit the store. And when you visit the store, depending on how much of the stuff you have unlocked, you can run up and purchase it in exchange for souls, which, of course, you gain souls by defeating enemies. And although the one thing is that you do lose all the souls once you start a new game, that is to say, if you get a game over. So it's kind of tough to, like, to unlock stuff, you know, in that sense, because, you know, you lose all your currency. And it's hard to gain the amount of currency that you need early on. So really, the game makes you struggle for the first part of it, for sure. And at the end of every stage, there's a nice big screen-filling boss that is actually really challenging. Even the first boss is just, like, you know, something you would see in a, you know, much more, like, you know, less of a roguelike and more of a standard platformer kind of thing. Like, you know, they have these big elaborate moves and hitboxes to match. So, yeah, progress is tough to make in this game. But the whole thing runs really smoothly. It has, you know, the platforming element. When you jump around it, like, you get a pretty good amount of height. And of course, you can get items that increase the height, and you get a double jump, and it runs really smoothly. So you can actually get pretty acrobatic in it. You know, of course, it's a twin stick shooter kind of thing. So, like, when you aim your gun, like, it's actually pretty easy to aim, which is good, because every single gun, including your initial, like, you know, pea shooter pistol, has limited ammo. And I mean limited. Typically, like, all of the first waves of guns I got, including the machine gun, had only 20 bullets.
Jeez. So,
yeah. And that's the thing also about this game, is that ammo does not just drop anywhere. Like, this seems like the kind of game where it's like they should drop ammo constantly, and then the challenge is getting there, because, you know, you got crowds of enemies to burn through. But no, not only are there a lot of enemies, but there's scarce resources. But again, your other weapon is a free to use knife that's twice your size, and you can upgrade it too. One that I got was, like, a pair of like samurai swords, and they weren't too much on the ground. Like, if you just swung them, they were kind of slow, but they allowed you to do a spin attack, and that spin attack was dynamite. Like, that was the key to victory for that first boss. And it's also a weapon that you can use in the tutorial. So, like, I think it's a weapon that occurs pretty regularly. Now, one little thing I guess a kind of the only real complaint I have, like, you know, all of this is in the nature of roguelikes, so I'm not going to complain about the difficulty at all. It's difficult, and that's how it should be. However, if you you switch between your two weapons with the shoulder buttons, and let's say you switch to your knife, and then you get the shop that pops up, and you go in, and you're like, all right, great, time to purchase the big old shotgun. And so you purchase the big old shotgun. Well, if you had the knife equipped when you picked up the shotgun, you just lost the knife. And now you have two guns that are limited in ammo. So you can lose your infinite use weapon, and then you'll have no choice but to actually just run your head into enemies if no ammo drops, and then, you know, just die and come back with, you know, your stock 20 bullets, and then just hope you can. Yeah, so you got to be real careful about how you play this game. Having said, though, it's a pretty good time. It's nice and rowdy, and if you're a fan of the aesthetic of Super Meat Boy and Binding of Isaac, not only does the game, you know, have that same kind of art style, but it also, like, you know, directly refers to them. Like, you can actually unlock, like, some costumes that are very reminiscent.
Nice. Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you say?
I say, yeah, if you if this idea appeals to you, this is definitely a worthy game. It's very surprising that it was only made by one person. So, but just reading about him, what was it, Zax was his name? Okay, yep. Yeah, reading his story, he seems like he's very passionate about this thing. So, like, he definitely put a lot of care into it. And the composer, whose name also escapes me, is the other person that worked on it. But there was a separate composer. But yeah, apart from that, it's just the one guy. And I think he made something good here. So go pick it up.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is called Rogue Heroes Runes of Tassos, developed by Heliocentric Studios, published by Team 17, released February 23rd on Switch and PC for $19.99. Team up with friends to combat procedural dungeons, explore an expansive overworld full of secrets, and take down the Titans to save the once peaceful land of Tassos. Ernell, tell us about Rogue Heroes Runes of Tassos.
This game is, well, cat's out of the bag. I'm not going to go on that for you. So, this game is essentially idea behind, like, someone who played maybe Zelda Four Swords and was like, what if we took that game but left it as kind of like a normal Zelda-style game instead in order to give you a cohesive world to explore, and then made it a roguelike, and then took templates from A Link to the Past for the dungeons, and you get this cool little game. The idea that you... Again, this is one of the games where they don't really give you much of a plot. It's just meant to get you thrown into it. You wake up in a town that has a whopping one house in it. And when you come outside, there's a man who's hanging out with you who said, hey, help me build my home here so that I can do more to expand this town. Oh, and also, you got to go and raid four dungeons to defeat the four guardians to save the land or whatever. So the idea behind that then becomes you're exploring this overworld, with the initial intent being to get enough gems to give to this guy so he can build a house in town. Now, here's where it gets a little interesting, though. The overworld is static, so that part is not the roguelike at all. You run around, you fight enemies in the world with your sword attack, kind of like, again, a Zelda style. And you can cut bushes to get money and sometimes hearts to regenerate health. However, whenever you end up getting to a dungeon, you are tasked with going in, and once you accept the ability to go into the dungeon, you get wiped of all of your gems, which is the currency that you can only get inside of dungeons proper. You're wiped from all your gems, and you're sent inside. The dungeons are randomly generated, as in there's preconceived room stylings, but they are randomly arranged in the actual dungeon. And you will proceed from room to room,
and you're locked in.
Yeah, you're locked in. That's a killer, by the way. Because I attempted that the first time.
You can't
get the hell back out. Once you're in, you're stuck. Now, and the other thing about that, as Chris makes that comment, not only can you not leave, but health generation from kills and breaking of pots is a lot more reduced in dungeons than it is out of the map. Like, suddenly, hearts are scarce, and you could probably die, which is what they want you to do. So, and what ends up happening is you're locked in, you're going from room to room killing monsters, and every room has a quote-unquote room clearing condition. It usually revolves around killing all the enemies
finding any hidden treasure chests and locating all the doors in the room. And the game lets you know when you've cleared the room. And I think that's just primarily there just to let you know that there's nothing left for you to scavenge there. You found everything that room was meant to have. And the things you generally find in dungeons are gems, again, which I'll get into their reasoning in a second. Very, very, very rarely you might find some money, hearts for healing, and every once in a while you'll find a tool, a dungeon tool. However, the dungeon tools that you find in the dungeons themselves are actually called glass tools, meaning that they give them to you when they feel like they just want you to have it, but if you die, you don't get to keep it. It's gone, gone, gone.
It's just like a link between worlds in that one, in that sense.
That's a good call, It's like the rental tool system. And what ends up happening is, like, you're running around, you'll get the occasional tool, you'll fight monsters, and eventually you'll find your way off the floor and go to the next floor. And eventually you're going to die. You might be saying, that's not true. This is like a Zelda game. Zelda games are fairly easy. I'm not going to die. I said the same thing. No, you're going to die a lot. The game is designed to kill your ass. Like, you're not going to break it. And what happens when you die is you're booted back to the main town. You keep every gem you found when you died, before you died. And you also keep your money now, I think about it. And then when you're back in town, you can visit the guy I mentioned earlier. And you can spend those gems to build a number of facilities in the town. Actually, you do a lot with gems in this game. You use the gems to build, to pay him to build new facilities. And those facilities have a variety of different functions. You might have a facility that will allow you to trade monster parts for permanent dungeon tools. There's a facility that you can use to upgrade your attack power and your health and your magic. There's a facility to buy new classes. There's a lot of facilities. There's a lot of facilities. And you're going to spend a lot of damn gems unlocking them all. So prepare yourself. And to tie back to what I said earlier about, you know, getting through the dungeon without dying, and the fact that that's impossible, is the fact that a lot of the gems are spent to upgrade your character's, you know, resources and strength and health. And as you go further into the individual dungeons themselves, there's like an actual enemy level above every enemy you fight. And it starts out at one, and eventually it gets pretty high up there to the point where one hit will take like 3/4 of your health, with regaining health being damn near impossible. So, like, if you find yourself dying, don't feel bad. It's intended. But you'll be spending those gems a lot to unlock new stuff and upgrade your character to eventually get to the point where you can get to the bottom and fight a boss and kick the level start out of his ass, which will be great. And then, of course, after you do that, you'll be going to the next of the four dungeons in total. But you'll be going around the overworld to do so, and that has a variety of little hidden secrets on it, too, including some gems that when you amass a certain amount of them, it'll reduce your penalties for death, or when you go into the dungeons, or rather. Because, again, like I said, when you go back to another dungeon and make another run, any gems you don't spend get burned out. But if you get enough like these little power orb things, you are able to keep some of what you lose, so it's not like a complete loss. But the only thing I wish that I kind of hate about the game that I came across or experienced was a few little things. One, this isn't the game's fault. I'm just going to point it out though. If you have Joy-Con drift, watch your ass on this game, because I had a little Joy-Con drift and you will get yourself killed, whether it's from a trap or an enemy a little too close to you while you're swinging your weapon. Because the second thing I was going to point out is that, one thing I never really noticed about Zelda until I played this, they're a little nice about enemy knockback in Zelda games. So if you hit a dude with your sword, he kind of bumps back a little bit to give you a little bit of breathing room. In this game, not so much. When you hit an enemy, he's not getting pushed back. And if you're not careful, you'll hit him and then just walk right into him. I've done that more than a few times. And Joy-Con Drift made that more than a few times, like very many times. So, just be mindful of the fact that you might be doing more of a stick and move sort of operation in this game. Though, thankfully, you can attack either by using like a normal button press, but there's also like the twin stick styling to it too, where you can kind of like point in a direction or click in a direction, and you'll swing your sword over there.
And some of the characters you can unlock have projectiles for weapons.
See, that's one thing I'm surprised at, 'cause like, one thing that shocked me, and maybe you noticed something that I didn't on this, like I did unlock the hunter thinking he'd be get a bow. Because right. It just sounded like he would, but he was just using a sword.
Yeah, I think it's just that he's better with the bow, which he would get in the dungeon.
That makes sense. Because I was like, come on, he's just start with the bow. He's the damn hunter.
You probably have to build him one with the blacksmith.
Ah, that makes sense. I've been looking at doing that then because, you know, typical me, I don't want to spend any of my crap. So I get a bow and arrow and I got 10 arrows. Like, I don't want to shoot it.
Well, that's what I like about this game is that it does force you to spend your gems.
Yes, it does. There's no hoarding in this because if you try to go back to the dungeon, it's all waste anyway. So you may as well burn through it. So, but like, I wish I knew you had this because we could have tried to do two players and see how that worked. But
yeah, well, I've got the, I got it on Steam.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure it has crossplay, but yeah, it's an up to 4-player multiplayer game.
And I honestly like the idea behind that too, because I can see some of the lower floors in the dungeons being well suited for 4 players. And also even some of the normal floors, because once you get to areas where there's like a lot of spike traps and all, and you're trying to make 4 people not get hit by them as they're trying to maneuver around them. Yeah. Someone's going to die. So that's part of the fun of it all though. Really. It's
like herding kittens.
Come on, where you don't stop, damn it. Oh, well, I guess starting over again, you know, but that's the joy of it all, you know? But this is one of those games where like, I did not see this coming. Joe offered it, and I looked at it on the store. I was like, looks okay, but nothing to write home about. But as it goes with the show, that's usually some of the best surprises. When you pick up a game, you're like, this is actually pretty freaking fun. Like,
yeah,
I would not have expected this, but I'm glad I didn't, because now it becomes a great surprise. This is a good game. It's a legitimately solid game. And to be frank, I will mention this. Like, I remember maybe it was something that happened on one of the earlier releases, but I remember seeing a lot of people reference like glitches and bugs or something. I didn't experience anything of the sort. Nothing. Like, that's the game good. Seemed to work pretty good for me. So maybe that just means that the Switch version worked all that stuff out. But all in all, like, I think this game is a lot of fun. Likely much better if you got friends to play it with you, but it even works as a solo experience too. It's not going to dethrone Zelda or anything, but I don't think that's what they intended to do either. So just don't come here looking for like freaking Nintendo Masterpiece Theater and you'll be fine.
Well, $20 then, what do you say?
I think it's a good buy title as well.
Cool beans. Chris, any thoughts?
Yeah, I really love this one. I actually added it to my Switch wish list after I played the Steam version. I really love how basically they kind of combine like things in just the right way. Like, they're combining a town building sim, like in the old kind of made me think of ActRaiser and Soul Blazer and like those kind of games, how you're building the town while you're building your hub, which I always like in a roguelike. I like that. Again, it lets you keep all the gems, but you don't get to grind them. So, like, you kind of have to, like, plan ahead on, maybe don't buy all the cheap things first. Maybe try to get the expensive things first. So that way, if you die early and you only have, like, 200 gems, and you at least have something to spend them on.
Yeah.
And the dungeons have great touches to them. Like, the glass items thing is actually really cool, I think, because it gives you access to items that you won't have permanent access to quite yet until you spend more gems. I like that there are randomly shopkeepers in the dungeons that you can purchase thing. You can like purchase arrows and bombs from and stuff.
Oh, they're dicey though too, because you get one shot at it.
Yeah, if you
set up a few times.
If you don't buy something from them, they just straight up disappear. So you can't just be like BRB. and the combat just feels really good. It's nice and fast. Like, it reminded me of Zelda mixed with Quest of Dungeons, which this game is very close to Quest of Dungeons in terms of being one of my favorite roguelites. So,
and Quest of Dungeons, yeah, is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I bought that game like 4 times. I think I own it on everything it's available on. I was a big fan of Quest of Dungeons, and this one, like, maybe it's the graphic style, which, I mean, that's actually not accurate to say, because it's a bit better. Like, for instance, when you break pots and you walk through the remains of the pots, it like they shift. Like, debris shifts, and like when you cut bushes, which of course you're going to do a lot because it's a Zelda like, the leaves like shift around and stuff as you walk through them. Like, there's some great graphic touches in here for it being a, 8-bit callback style. So, yeah, this game's great. I love it.
Cool.
And yeah. Speaking of the pots thing, just worth warning people of, like, unlike with Zelda in that regard, you really need to be careful which pots you break, because every single time I accidentally broke a pot with a snake in it, it yeah. always hits me. Like, you don't get to go, oh, a snake, and step back. It will punish you.
Yeah. It's tough, but I really still enjoy it. And like I said, I'm going to get it on Switch as soon as I can.
Awesome. All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Thunder Flash, developed by Seep, published by Rattlelake Games, released February 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and Switch for $4.99. The Kashmir is being occupied by a criminal organization known as Bloody Wolf, and your job is to make your country proud by taking them all down. Fight your way through waves of soldiers, explosives, vehicles, and drones, and bosses, and collect more powerful weapons. Show that you have what it takes to be a hardcore warrior. Chris, tell us about Thunder Flash.
Okay, Thunder Flash. So this is a arcade-style top-down run-and-gun. This is going to remind people of certain bits of Contra, but certainly, for instance, it references Bloody Wolf, and that's a TurboGrafx game, an arcade game that it definitely draws some inspiration from, and Ikari Warriors, Heavy Barrel, and whatnot. It's delightfully goofy, in a certain sense, and also there's like some like straight up mistranslations and misspellings, which again, if you didn't know, Bloody Wolf has one of the most famous mistranslated lines in video games, and that's when you go into a room and the enemy says to you, "You invaders, get you the hot bullets of shotgun to die," which is classic. Wow. This one in the intro story is, you're being briefed on the enemies that you have to fight. And one of the members of Bloody Wolf is a bulldozer. But in the actual text, it says the second member is bulldozer because it's two Z's and just things like that. I love it. Anyway. So yeah, you can do either a standard arcade run, like you run through, various levels and defeat a boss at the end, or you can do a survival mode, which just lets you defeat waves after waves of enemies, which I didn't get too far in the survival mode, but I watched a video of it and they utterly fill up the screen with enemies at certain points. If you do really well on that, they will just pile in, like, where it starts to make you like feel nervous about social distancing even though you are armed with a flamethrower. So yeah, you choose from your two characters, Rock and Stan, which I posted in our Skype chat is looking like the new profile picture for Robin and Purnell for their for Rhythm and Pixels.
I'm Stan.
Yeah, they're pretty great. They're exactly the same too. They have the same stats. I believe that you unlock stats through gameplay and like different things. There's a lot of stuff blocked off that's like, come back later and this will be available. And anyway, so you run through the stages, and like if you've played any kind of run and gun, then you know exactly what to expect. You'll be shooting pea shooter bullets at enemies, and typically if they're human enemies, it's one shot kills them, and they actually give you a pretty good life bar, so you can make a lot of mistakes in this game. It's not like Contra. So, and plus you get chances to like refill your health and things like that, but the bosses are a little tougher, and certainly some enemies employ explosives, which even though it's top down, and the way an explosive graphic works is that a bomb lands on the ground and it explodes and there's a cloud that goes up, right? Well, everything including that cloud is a hitbox. So the explosives really travel a long way. So, and they also put proximity mines on the ground. So if you walk over those, they'll beep like a couple of times and then explode. And those actually tend to pose more danger than the actual enemies. But, gives you a pretty good challenge. Nothing like too over the top. Of course, it does have a higher difficulty setting if you like. So here's the thing that's different about this game that I don't think I've ever seen in a run and gun. The screen does not wait like the scrolling, it's not an auto scroller. It's you travel through the stages, but they don't lock you in until the boss. So you can just walk through the enemies. You can just ignore them and walk right past them and the game will keep going. You can actually pacifist run your way all the way to the boss.
Nice.
You won't get any good power-ups that way, but weirdly, this game does not stop you from just walking straight to the boss. And I was like, this, I don't know if this is a bug or just an oversight, or they just want you to do this. I don't know.
Speed runs.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that's the way you speed run. Pacifist run it. Pacifist running a run and gun is hilarious to me. So I was, I actually did try a few levels to not kill anybody and just walk to the end. And yeah, it's pretty great. Oh, and then, you know, there are some, there's some variances as well. Like, for instance, stage 4 is a side scrolling, like kind of a shmup, because you're actually like kind of flying through the air. I like that they give your characters like kind of a costume change when you're in snowy weather. Like, they actually aren't running through every stage with their shirts off, which, you know, sometimes they'll put on like an actual coat if the stage is cold, which I actually really like that touch. It's got a lot of good touches to it, honestly. And like I said, it's all about just, like I said, you know, running to those mini bosses and then regular boss at the end of the stage. And the game is pretty standard, but I like a lot of the touches that they add in.
Nice. So $5, your verdict?
Yeah, it's definitely worth $5. I would say there was nothing really, like, it's well put together. So, you know, I would say it's either a buy it or a fuck it, why not? And is this one a Rattalaika? I think it is. Yep. Interestingly, it does not have easy achievements. You actually have to beat the game.
Yeah.
But beating the game is not that hard. So, but yeah, you won't just like burn through all the achievements in like a minute.
Like, but, our next game. Right?
I didn't actually check this one because it's on... because I was playing it on PC.
Well, Castle of No Escape, Windows 10 achievements. Yeah. You were getting Xbox achievements, right?
I guess so, yeah. I didn't check them because I don't really know how to do that on Windows 10. I only play Windows 10 when it's games I need to review.
Makes sense. All right, well, last game for you to talk about is Castle of No Escape, developed by Dex Team, published by Zelon, released March 3rd on Windows 10 for $4.99. Explore the mysterious castle full of monsters and secrets in a quest to collect all the treasures that will also protect you from the curses on your way and crush the main boss. The game won't let you exit the castle no matter how you try. Technically, you can win, but there is no end. Chris, what is Castle of No Escape?
Okay, so this is also a roguelike. This one actually kind of plays like a one-player board game, which is interesting. Of course, it gives you the story, emphatic quotes here, and you choose one of three different characters, and you try to get to, like, you know, you try to get all the treasures that, you know, are kind of in your inventory screen that's on the right side of the screen there. On the left side of the screen, which is your playing field, the floors of the castle are represented by just a straight up 6x6 grid. And your character starts in one spot and you run over each part of the grid, and then it's basically all of them have question marks. And as you move over each piece, it tells you what's on that grid. It could be an enemy. It could be a treasure. It could be the stairway to the next room. It could be a staircase to the previous room. You just don't know. And the other thing is that the enemies could be, like, let's say a goblin that has 22 HP, and, you know, your character, depending on which class you pick, will have like 20 to 30 HP. So you're like, okay, well, it's not HP, it's actually strength. So they determine that your strength is also your life. But yeah, so like, you just push a button to choose to attack the enemy, and it rolls the dice, and you either miss, actually you miss a lot, but so does the enemy. Like, you both kind of miss, and you know, if you win the dice roll, then you win against the enemy, and you might get powered up or something like that, or get a treasure. If not, then you die and you have to start the game over. So it could be like a goblin with like 22 HP or something like that. Or it could be a dragon with like 52 HP. Like, they're pretty, they have a pretty wide swath of like types of enemies you can just randomly run into right at the beginning of the game. So, but everything, like I said, is very simple. If, let's say, you open a treasure chest and it's got a better weapon, it just says, you got a better weapon, and it just automatically equips it. Like, it doesn't bother to tell, like, you know, it's, you don't really have get to spend a lot of time determining whether this is the better weapon for you. The game just tells you. And good thing, too, you know, you'll really love to see those better weapons, because, again, the game is pretty tough, and it's very luck-based, so...
And that's if you get that far, because again, this doesn't apply to you because you don't pay attention to achievements, but it's a Zetalon game, which means the achievements in this game are ridiculously easy to get. For example, nice. Three of the achievements for 300 of the 1,000 points are to start the game as each of the three characters. There is nice. An achievement to successfully evade an attack.
Yeah.
One to open the first chest, one to open a second chest. There is one achievement to not do anything for 10 seconds.
Oh, I got that one. Yeah, I did get that one.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because it's not time-based at all. Like, the game waits for you to do everything. Yeah, it's entirely turn-based, so that's mm-hmm. really funny that they have a counter in there only to determine when you've waited for 10 seconds. They can give you a reward. But yeah, like I said, it's the game itself, though, like it's tough, but it's so compelling. I really actually quite liked, you know, moving around the little grid and like seeing if I could get the upper hand on some enemies and stuff. And, you know, the different classes are pretty cool. You know, one of them's way better at evading enemies, and especially like getting to get away from them before they do anything. You know, there's a mage class, and of course the hero class, which is the most tanky, if such a thing exists in this game. But yeah, like it, because it's so random, like you do see a big variety of stuff between playthroughs. So yeah, it's as simple as it can possibly be, to the point where I think you could actually make a tabletop one player game out of this. Like, you could actually, you know,
build it's a simple board game enough out of it.
Yeah, it was just a pair of dice. You could probably like actually, you know, make a real, not real game, but like a board game out of it. But as it stands,
Pernell's job.
Yeah. As it stands, it's a fine video game. And the price is right. So I actually purchased it on Switch myself. So
nice. Yeah. So $5 your verdict?
Well, take it from me. I think it's worth it. And like I said, I bought it on Switch after reviewing the Steam, the Windows 10 version, sorry. And yeah, I think it's cool. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea. It is, again, difficult and not very flashy. But if you are the kind who like really old school feeling like RPG type things, then this is definitely something to keep in your pocket.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for us. Well, for you, I have a couple more reviews to do with Tim. So I'm going to let you two get going. Does either of you have any final words?
Spring's almost here. Get 8 hours of sleep.
I'm going to go eat some cereal. Yeah,
do that.
Some war torn cereal.
All right, and finally, we are bringing in Tim Ekibus to wrap up the show. Tim, how are you doing?
Good. All right, it's a Monday. I had to retract my initial good assessment. I was like, no, I'm tired.
On second thought, it's Monday. We're recording this bullshit.
This part's fine. It was the rest of it. But, yeah. Yeah, ready to talk about some games, beginning of the work week, blah.
Yeah.
It snowed again today. It was like, I had the moment over the weekend where it was like, oh, it's rainy and like all the snow is disappearing. And there was a day last week where it was like in the 40s, which is luxurious after it's been in the teens and 20s for a long time. It's like, oh, right. I guess it's March. Spring is going to sprung. And then it was like, nope, here's some snow. Here's a weather alert that the roads could get icy. And I'm like, fucking come on. Like, come on. Whatever. I know it's not over yet. Winter, that is. But, You're not. I'm not safe from winter until at least like the end of April, really.
Well, we're getting there. It's already early March, so it's going to start warming up soon.
Well, it might.
Fingers crossed.
It was like cold until June last year.
I'm trying to stay optimistic. I've had a shitty day. I'm trying to be positive for
see?
Once.
See?
My Monday sucked too. So.
Somebody's got a case of Mondays.
God damn right I do. But you have three games to talk about, so should we just dive into these?
Yeah, sure. We'll have mostly a better time talking about these.
All right. Well, first game is called Hellpoint, developed by Cradle Games, published by Tiny Build, released February 25th on the Switch for $34.99. Once a glorious pinnacle of human achievement, the Irid Novo Station is now devastated, completely overrun by evil interdimensional entities, and dominated by the will of the malevolent cosmic gods. You were a creation of the cryptic author, crafted and sent to investigate Irid Novo in an attempt to figure out the unholy series of events that led to the strange incident known as the Merge. Tim, what is Hellpoint?
The Merge! Hellpoint is what happened if, like, Dark Souls fucked Dead Space and out came this game. They made a beautiful, hellish baby together. No, that's pretty much the idea, really, is it is a Souls-like game, and it falls under the Souls-like, on the Souls-like spectrum, it falls on the trying to be exactly like Souls End, not unlike Mortal Shell, which I reviewed last year and enjoyed quite a bit. It's just like, hey, Dark Souls, let's do that. So your control scheme will feel pretty familiar to anyone who's played those types of games where you have your attacks on your shoulder buttons, which I guess is actually becoming much more commonly adopted throughout kind of action adventure games anyways at this point. But, you know, you have your rolling, you have to deal with an equipment load, you are, you know, you have these like checkpoints where you can trade in your currency to upgrade your stats. You have when you die, you leave it's not a blood stain on the ground, but you leave a thing there that you need to, and you drop all your currency there. So you need to run back to your body to get your stuff back. That's what's going on here. That's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I like look at a trailer of the gameplay and I'm like, oh, I see what's up here. This looks familiar to me. That's kind of the basic premise, except it takes place on kind of this, well, obviously it's a futuristic space station. We only have one now and it doesn't look like this. But yeah, like far future sort of like, space station, you know, it is got a bit of a horror bent to it, and kind of the mood of the game, I think, is pretty cool. I like the tone it sets. I think the music is really good. That is probably my favorite part about this game, is I think the music is very good at setting the atmosphere and feeling that kind of like space creepy, setting that kind of vibe. And I really like that. That was my favorite part of the game there. Got it out of the way already. So you can you manifest on this space station, and you're, you know, tasked with kind of the game is not very good at explaining some of the things that it has going on, which, you know, this type of game generally likes to obfuscate its mechanics a bit. But boy, they are obfuscating. They are being as opaque as possible. some things you should be aware of is there's like this mechanic. OK, so when you die, it leaves a, you know, your thing on the ground. And sometimes it's not all the time, though it happened like every time this I died, but once. When you go back to your body, there will be a ghost of your character there that will try to kill you. That's a new thing. That sucks. I don't like that. Getting back your shit is usually stressful enough without having to fight yourself, because you are you're the AI in control of your body is a motherfucker. That thing doesn't. Yeah, no, it's a real. It sucks. It took me a while to realize that was what. So the first time I died, it was because I fell down a random pit that I couldn't quite see. And so when my ghost came running at me, the ghost also fell in the pit. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Wonder what that was about. And it wasn't until later that I put two and two together. I'm like, oh, when I die, right, this thing ends up patrolling the area. So yeah, if you die in the middle of an area with a bunch of enemies, it's like, oh great, there's also this extra super hard motherfucker ready to try to fight you before you get your stuff back, or just generally make your life miserable. But I'm not sure whether or not this is tied to this other mechanic where the space station is kind of close to a black hole, and I think it's like orbiting it, I would assume, because when you are the closest you can be, the station is as close as it can be to the black hole, like bad things will happen and can happen. But there's like a little dial in the upper left that kind of shows how close you are to it being bad black hole time. And boy, that is not explained. And it's kind of important at moments, because I'm just like, why are things going really bad here? And it's like, oh, this is why. Because then I would go back later and it would be like, oh, there's nothing here. What's going on? So that's a thing. You pick up like equipment and shit for your character. And you put in stats into different, or you put in points into different stats. It has a lot. So in most Souls games, or, you know, RPGs that I think of this ilk, you have a selection of a class at the beginning of the game. This game does not have that. You just start out, your stats are all ones, and then you start going about your business. And it's a little off. That was a little off-putting to me, because there are very clearly different builds and ways to build your character, whether you want to lean, because there is like magic. You can lean into, you know, strength, like dexterity, which is called reflex. You can lean into guns. There are guns, though you're not going to find a gun early on. So you're sitting there like the first handful of points you get, you're going to pour into like basic stuff. And I kind of wish that this game had different starting classes, so I could have dabbled around more at the beginning to figure out like kind of what I wanted. And also wouldn't have hurt to have a little bit more of a fighting chance in kind of the early portions of the game. It was a while before I even found like some damn armor to put on. So that's going on. So you explore the station, you find different areas, you fight bosses, you get new items and equipment and start unraveling the mystery. And it's all very okay. It is not exceptional stuff. Like, yeah, as a couple, you know, new ideas, but, it's kind of just like a lot of dull wandering around. You get into the fights, like the combat feels a little bit, you know, kind of stiff, but it's okay. The fucking problem with this game is it runs like garbage on the Switch, especially in handheld mode. In handheld mode, I would declare it to be pretty much unplayable. Like the frame rate dips well below 30, and you need a good frame rate for these games to be able to react to stuff and time your rolls and you know, manage your iframes and stuff like that to roll through attacks and fight enemies. But like, it's just like on handheld, especially, it's like the frame rate shits the bed, especially when you're around like a number of enemies or larger enemies, when there's stuff going on the screen, like the textures look bad. The animations look bad. Like, it looks like you're playing a PS2 game when you're on in handheld mode. And when you're on, if you're playing docked, it does look a bit better. It is a bit sharper, but it still suffers from frame drops when business picks up. Yeah. And that is a killer, like, for this game. From what I can see, you know, just kind of looking at videos from other consoles and releases, like, it looks fine. Like, it looks like it runs fine on those, but like, this Switch port is not a good port. It is not good. So like, yeah,
I still have to ask, $34.99. What is your verdict?
So at best, you know, I think under ideal circumstances, this game would probably, you know, stand to be a try it for some Souls looking fan, but like the Switch version, you should not buy at this time unless they decide to patch it up to get it up to snuff with the other consoles. So at minimum, you should not be buying the Switch version. And you need to, if you're interested in the game, you should be looking at it on other platforms.
So try it on something that isn't the Switch.
Yeah, basically. But the Switch version, that's a big no right now. Hopefully they'll get it shined up. I know, you know, it would not be the first game that came out on Switch that was a bit rough that got patched up later on. So
Tiny Build is usually pretty good at keeping their stuff updated and working well. So if there are any updates, we will be sure to update you as well.
Yeah.
All right. Next game is called Curse of the Dead Gods. I keep calling it Curse of the Dad Gods when I type it to people. No reason I needed to bring that up. But not
Curse of the Old Gods.
Nope, Curse of the Curse Dad of the Gods. Dead Gods. Yeah, Curse of the Dead Gods, developed by Pastech Games, published by Focus Home Interactive, released February 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. You seek untold riches, eternal life, divine powers, elites to this accursed temple, a seemingly infinite labyrinth of bottomless pits, deadly traps, and monsters. Tim, what is Curse of the Dead Gods?
Curse of the Dead Gods is a game that most people will look at and go like, is this Hades? As both my child and my wife did when I was playing it, they were like, both of them did double takes, and they're like, "Oh, wait, this isn't Hades." I'm like, "No, it's not Hades." So we'll get that out of the way right off the bat. This game confirmed not Hades. It's just that so this is a roguelike, and it takes place from that same kind of top down perspective as Hades. You know, the recent, you know, perhaps consensus game of the year. One of the best games of last year, let's say. It's an overhead dungeon crawling roguelike thing. And so, yeah, at a glance, you might look at it and think like, wait, are you? Oh, wait, no, different game. And it is a different game. So Curse of the Dead Gods, you are a explorer and you are exploring these temples / crypts of the eponymous dad gods, dead gods. Whatever you want to call them. And so you'll go into a temple. You have a couple weapons starting out. You have your main weapon. You have a backup. You have a secondary weapon. And those can take the form. They have. They don't pull from the same pool. Like if a weapon is a primary weapon, it's a primary weapon. If it's a secondary weapon, it's a secondary weapon. And then they'll have a. You can start picking up two-handed weapons later on. That will become a thing later, but your primary weapon, it could be, at base, it's like, it's a machete, or it could be a mace, or it could be like a throwing knife. So they do have ranged things, and offhand weapons could also be like, they are not necessarily the first one they give you is a pistol. So they kind of prep you to be like, oh, that's going to be your ranged attack, but that's not always the case either. Sometimes that is also a melee weapon. Because you can get whips for that slot or knives, and which I happen to really like the knives. And same with the two-handed weapon as well, because you can pick up bows for that as well as like big two-handed swords and maces and melee weapons of that ilk. So nothing is necessarily like ranged or close up. So you'll have that. You have a dodge roll. I feel like something else. You could parry enemies. That's important. You have a torch, which is also important, as this is leaning into kind of your Lovecraftian darkness is madness, old gods make you go crazy sort of shit.
Yeah, light is good. Mechanic is pretty interesting, yes. In this game. I do like that as you set things alight, the room brightens up and the enemies become weaker, but as things burn, they obviously go out after time. And then you got to decide if you want to hit people with your weapon or pull out your torch, which will make them weaker, but do a whole lot less damage.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, relight the, yeah, there's some management to that, whether you're trying to keep the room. Well, it also incentivizes you of, you know, lighting up a room and then taking care of your business quickly before any lights go out. And some lights just seem to stay on, but like, the environment can get destroyed, traps as well as light sources can just get destroyed in the midst of a fight. So lots can go on with that, but it's an important mechanic. I think that's your base of maneuvers. And some things you have stamina that you need to keep track of, because rolling uses stamina. You can hold down your attack buttons to do a strong attack. That uses stamina. Using your two-handed weapons, just using them, uses stamina. So you have to manage that. You can get stamina back either just by kind of standing around for a second or walking around for a second, or you can get it by doing parries. It will refill. It's a thing to manage. So there's that. So you go into a dungeon, you are exploring rooms. It will give you a... The game will show you like a route through the temple, and you can kind of plan your route because each room or kind of chamber or whatever will have its own reward that it will show you on the map. So you can kind of map that out where you want to go, and there will be different branching paths to reach temple, but you kind of get an idea of where you want to go. So you start going through the temple. You will find gold, which is super important. You can find relics, which are like passive upgrades. You can find different weapons along the way. And so when you get to the end of a chamber, there's usually some kind of a statue there that will give you either you can buy weapons, upgrade weapons, buy relics, or upgrade your character's kind of stats. There's one for strength, there's one for your health, one for your attack, and one for your perception, which is your gold find ability. And weapons can get bonuses based on those things. As well, but the cost for, and this is something I wasn't sure how I felt about early on playing the game, is you still have to pay for your reward for clearing a chamber, and you can pay for that either in gold if you have the money, or you can pay for it with a blood sacrifice. A blood sacrifice, you say? Well, I'm sure that doesn't have consequences, and you'd be wrong. So each time you sacrifice blood, each time you go through one of these purple-eyed doors at the end of a chamber, I think it's every time, even though sometimes I feel like I didn't see the number actually go up. And certain enemies will use sanity attacks that are usually coded in purple. And you have a meter in your lower right, and every time you go over, it goes over 100.
Uh-oh.
So anyways, yeah, so once your sanity meter, which you can get by, purple coded attacks from enemies, blood price at the shops, going through doors, once it goes over 100 and you go through one of those doors, you are then inflicted with a curse. And that curse has usually a detriment and a benefit that I've seen. It's not like a straight detriment. And those can range from like, I got one, probably should have thought of these a bit more. I got one where it made my torch dark. So I no longer could light, I could no longer light like braziers in the room, but I also enemies didn't do extra damage anymore from being in the darkness. And there was like some other like penalty to it too. It was a really interesting one. But usually it's like, oh, traps will, here's one. So like the chests that you'll find are all booby trapped, and you'll have to do a parry, cause the thing is going to try to kill you. But it'll have like more treasure in it. So it adds like a little more reward and a little more danger at the same time. And the game warns you not to get 5 of those curses on your ass, which I didn't. So good on me. But even then, like at first, this system seemed really oppressive because I was just racking up the sanity. I did not have enough fucking gold to buy anything. And I'm like, this sucks. What kind of a reward is it from a chamber if I never have enough money to buy it? And I'm just blowing through my sanity trying to get it. But eventually, I got a little bit better at figuring out how to get money. And also you can start as you... just play the game. You accrue some different currencies, crystal skulls, which will make you shudder with thoughts of the last of Indiana Jones movies. Of course it will. Everybody knows. As soon as you see crystal skull, people are over here like, So you get crystal skulls and you get jade rings, and you can use those things. Jade rings you can use to unlock more weapons to throw into the weapon pool. And crystal skulls, you are much more common. You only get jade rings when you clear a temple. It seems, at least that was the only time I ever fucking got them. And crystal skulls are a bit more common. You can find them and use them to unlock other like passive bonuses, more options for your starting weapon sets, just more stuff to try to help you, get better. But one of those things you can unlock pretty early on is that it just starts you with 1,000 gold. And I'm like, that is very nice. So you just start out with money so that you can be in good shape. But what I found myself doing is trying to pick routes where I was getting gold early and they were a bit more late loaded with things I would have to spend that money on. So I eventually figured it out and it felt pretty good. And I was generally making it to the temple bosses with, you know, only like a couple curses on myself and like a good amount of upgrades by the time I got to them. So the way the game is structured, so obviously you play through a temple. If you die, you go back to the kind of the hub and then you go out again. So it starts out, you have three different temples you can choose from, each with like a different, you know, kind of theme to it with different traps and enemies and a different boss at the end of it. You beat that boss at the end of it. And then it's like, hooray. And it takes you back to the temple. And you get a different currency. There's like these amulets you get when you actually clear a boss. So you have to, once you beat those first three temples, then another tier opens up and then you have to beat those three and then another tier opens up. So the game kind of builds on itself really nicely, I feel like. And it wasn't long. I played through each of the starter temples once, and then on my second run through each of them, I cleared them. So I did not have a tough time getting through them. And then I was like, okay, now I'm making progress. I'm getting currency. I am moving through the game. This is cool. This is fun. This actually feels pretty good. I'm not going to say, like, it is a much more, if you're someone who like cut your teeth on Hades, or you really enjoyed Hades and now you're burnt out on it and you're looking for something different, it's not quite as snappy and fast paced as that, but it's a much more deliberate, but it has a lot of different things going on in terms of the upgrades and the things you find and how you progress and the things you can watch out for, things to watch out for. So it definitely stands as like its own distinct game. Not that I doubted it would, but another cool thing is it has like these, I don't remember what it calls them, but it kind of has like, I guess I'll say like a daily run that it gives you, like a challenge run that it gives you that you get one shot at doing, and it'll give you like extra currency for it. And those are on timers. So I cleared one on Saturday, or I didn't clear it. What am I fucking saying? No, I didn't beat it, but it's like, it says, okay, here's the idea is that you will have no idea where you're going. So there's no map. It gives you like no information on a lot of things for as you're progressing through this temple, but you get more currency. You get like two extra crystal skulls every time you clear a room. So it's like, okay, that's cool. I'm going to play through that once. Oh, it was also like all black and white, so it was a bit moody. So you play through that once, you get one shot at it, and then it goes away. And then it'll say like, okay, there will be another one of these here in like a day or so. So it's just like a cool extra thing you can do for, you know, to change things up, and it incentivized you to do it. So I thought that was neat as well. Yeah.
Overall, it sounds like a really cool package. So $20 on it. What do you say?
You're right. This is definitely worth a buy. Like I didn't mention that it's also like a really nice looking game. Just has like a nice kind of like cell shady look to it, I guess I'd say. It is I guess I shouldn't say that. It felt a little clunky at first, but it did not feel as immediately satisfying as Hades, to compare it to Hades for the last fucking time, goddammit. I kind of didn't know how I felt about it, but like kind of once I got into the groove and got a feel for the controls and the mechanics and the systems, I was starting to feel really good about it. And, you know, then I couldn't put it down for like quite a bit. I was having a lot of fun with it. And yeah, I think it's totally worth it for $20. Nice. Bucks. It is a very nice game. And certainly, yeah, if you're sniffing for something after playing that other game, I think this is coming at just the right time.
Sounds good. Curse of the Dad Gods.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's what it's called.
One final game to discuss tonight is more of a preview of Fights in Tight Places, developed by Ground Shatter, published by Mode 7, released February 24th on Steam Early Access for $24.99. Play the first mission of Fights in Tight Spaces for free, and then a stylish blend of deck-building, turn-based tactics, and thrilling animated fight sequences in classic action-moving settings. Learn to balance your hand momentum and positioning to overcome the odds to defeat your adversaries. Tim, tell us about Fights in Tight Places.
Fights in Tight Places. Okay, so this is a tactical deck-building sort of game going on. You are a secret agent. And you are tasked with the various story, you know, various things of taking down different gangs and cartels and shit. So you pick kind of a class for your agent, which will give you the deck, which will give you a deck of different moves. And when you start the game, it's like, here is the balance deck and you can't touch the other ones yet. But the other ones, they tell you there's one that's more defensive, one that's more offensive, one that's more tricky. And they give you cards with different moves on them. So you get dropped into an area, like a three-quarter view, sort of grid view. And I don't remember where the first one takes place, but say the first one takes place in like a bar. It actually might take place in a bar. So you have your character and you will draw a certain number of cards each turn, and you have a certain amount of basically stamina points you can use. And the different cards will let you move or attack or move and attack at the same time, or like move enemies around. So you, and they have different costs to them. So it'll be like, okay, here is a card that is just like punch this guy in the face right in front of me. Okay. So you play that card, you punch that guy in the face. Well, I should say, so at the start of the turn, like all the characters are positioned and you can see the squares that the enemies are going to attack. So like, which is probably the square that you're on, right? But say like, okay, there's a guy with a gun behind me and there's a guy in front of me. And maybe there's like a guy to the side or something like that. I don't know. So it's like, okay, I'm going to use this card to, so maybe you're like surrounded. There's like a guy on each side of you and there's a guy with a gun behind you. So say you can play one card that's like, I can attack this guy to my right, which will do damage and push him back one square. So I have room to move, right? To move out one square.
Okay.
Then it's like, I'm going to punch this guy in front of me in the face just because I don't like him. And then you can like play a movement card to move out of the way, finish your turn. And then it's like that guy gets kicked out of the way. You move out of the way, but the guy with the gun still shoots his gun and shoots the guy that you punched in the face. Because he still fires his gun as if you were there. So kind of like each turn is taking place theoretically, like within like a few seconds in the real quote unquote world. Right. So you have time to do these swift secret agent moves where it's like, kick this guy out of the way, punch this guy over here, move out of the way. So he gets shot instead of you. And that's like that's a very basic rudimentary explanation of a turn. The goal is generally beat all the guys in the room, though there's other ones where you have to like protect an ambassador or, do this, that, or the other thing. So each turn you will then draw like a new, your cards in your hand are discarded unless they say you can't discard them. Then you draw new cards and that's like, okay, well, what do I have to do here? And it can get tricky and it's really about like, they put some pretty stringent, there's always a bonus, task of like completing of beating the room within like a handful of turns, which I was not great at. And you'd get like a money bonus or something like that. So it's about trying to figure out the most efficient way to manipulate enemies and, getting them to like hit each other or throw them. There's a throw or a push move, push, throw, I don't know, where you can like grab an enemy and move them to a square, like to the side. So you're manipulating like enemy position. You're playing cards to manipulate your own position. And then using attacks to do damage and such. You'll also be building up like a combo meter at the same time, which breaks when you move. So if like you're keeping your feet planted, you can build up combos for bigger damage. Though obviously that can get tough if there's a guy with a gun somewhere, but that might be a case where it's like, okay, well, I need to, they'll have some movement cards that won't break your combo. But it's like, okay, well, I need to try to move a guy between me and the gun rather than me moving out of the way of the gun, so it's a tactics game and it's a card game. And when you finish a level, you will, there's also positional related, moves I should mention. So it's like, you'll have a move where it's like, okay, if you're near a wall, you can bash the guy's head into the wall, but you have to be standing next to the wall to do it. Right. You can push guys into each other. If you push a guy out of the level, like out of the boundaries of the level. So it's like in the bar, if you push them out the doors, then they're gone.
Nice.
They're just dead on the level. Yeah. And that's something I feel like I needed to take advantage of a lot more, and wasn't. I think that's the key to kind of like clearing these levels quick, is getting near the door and then trying to like manipulate the enemies towards it and then throwing them out. So you'll beat a level, and you will usually, you'll get to pick a new card to add to your deck, and they'll have kind of like a map going through, not unlike this fucking Dead Gods game I just talked about. So you can kind of plan your route through. So there'll be like, there'll be different locations where fights will no doubt break out, you know, back alleys or, you know, bars or, just power plants or wherever. But there will also be things like gyms where you can go to spend money to upgrade your cards, or medics where you can go to spend money to heal up and stuff like that. Or just like there will be some that are just random events that can have different consequences. So there will be like a whole string of those. And then you'll get to the end of the level, and then there will be a boss, and then you beat the boss, and then you get your next mission. So for a game that is in early access, there's some early access games where I play them and I'm like, okay, well, this is rough, but I get the idea. There's some games where I play in early access where I'm like, okay, they still have a lot to do to this game. And then there's some games they play in early access, like this one, where I'm like, well, this is already like a pretty complete fucking game. Like, really? I know they have a lot more stuff to add to it and tweak and refine. Like, their timeline is they think it'll be in early access less than a year. So I think they're really just doing this to, you know, get feedback on how to tweak balance and what kind of cards to add and stuff like that. But like, it's already pretty robust game, and it looks, it has a really nice striking look to it. Like, everything is kind of black and white, except the, you know, enemy characters will be like red. They're in red, but it kind of, yeah, it's an interesting look to it. It's like the, They look like the guys out of the intro to Casino Royale, if anyone remembers that. That's what it looks like, though. So, yeah, it's a really cool look. It's a cool take on kind of both tactics games and card games at the same time. So it's already in a pretty good place. And like you said, in the copy there, there is a free prologue chapter you can just download to check out before you... you know, dunk $25 on the game itself if you want to get on the early access process.
Well, you mentioned it is an early access, so we don't want to give this one a verdict yet. Nah, is this something we should be keeping our eyes on?
Yes, definitely. It's like I said, the game is already in really good shape. And they're just, what I most feel like they need to add to it is more environments. Cause I was definitely seeing a lot of repeats, going through the, it's like, oh, it's another bar fight. Like, oh, okay. Or it's another alleyway, or it's another this or another that. Like, it needs a larger variety of those, is I think the biggest thing right now. And besides just like balance tweaks, but I think the look of the game is very nice, very clean. The systems that are in place are pretty cool. I would also, so it has a thing at the end of a level where you can like replay the fight. And it's totally unnecessary for a gameplay perspective, but I wish they tightened that up so it like actually played out a little bit more. Like, maybe they just need to do like highlights or something like that. Because sometimes it looks dumb with my character like moving back and forth to try to like dodge a gun guy. but I wish they spiced it up and like, you know, put in some cool camera work to make it look like I'm actually, you know, being a cool fighter badass. But that is so not important to how the game actually like plays in the end. I just think it would be cool. They also have like a daily run thing in there. So there's, you know, a day-to-day thing you can check in with, but yeah, the game seems in pretty solid shape already. So I look forward to them refining it and adding more stuff to it. And I think it will be something pretty cool by the time it comes out. I feel like probably.
Cool. And when it hits full release, I'm sure we'll give a final review on it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one. Big thanks to the Killer Queen Black crew for coming on and hanging out and chatting with us, and everyone who was on for that. And there were just so many people, and it's like I'm recording this on a Monday before it happened, so I can't credit anyone directly.
They're all in the past. I hope Cole's on.
She said that she might be getting power back soon, so she might have been on. I can't believe
she still doesn't have power. That's insane. I know,
how fucking crazy is that?
That's like, what, we're on like, what, 3 weeks now?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's insane. I don't know. That's insane. That's ridiculous. That's insane. And she wasn't even in Texas. It's insane.
I know. She's in friggin' Kentucky. Man. Tim, do you have any final words to end the episode?
Well, next episode, I'll be back for Wrestlecast. For the AEW branded Wrestlecast. That'll be coming up towards the end of the week as we give our predictions for the AEW Revolution card. And we'll actually get the podcast up before the show happens, because it's on Sunday.
Yeah.
It's on Sunday this time. So it'll be up in time for you to listen and hear our hot wrestling takes. And yeah.
Wrestle.
Yeah, I'm excited. AEW pay-per-views are always, they always deliver. So I'm excited. Not excited for it being a Sunday night, because man, next Monday's going to suck. Yay.